Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
All right, Joel, we're going to start with it, the backstage footage from All In. I'm going to go right to our Twitter poll. I asked, should AEW have aired the clip of the CM Punk Jack Perry backstage incident on AEW Dynamite? And I said, add an explanation and comments. 800 plus people have voted, and 81% say they should not have aired it. For those who didn't see it and are just joining our post show, first of all, thanks for joining us. It showed Punk walking up to Jack Perry backstage, and it was just a security camera, basically, low quality, but certainly could see what was going on. We saw the back of CM Punk and having some words for Perry, Perry having some words back for him, explaining himself. It seemed to get a little more heated based on body language and the frequency of the back and forth. Punk shoved Perry. He was the first one to initiate contact. And then he threw him in a guillotine, and Samoa Joe was standing by for the match, ran over, broke him up. Other security kind of pulled – or Jerry Lynn actually pulled Punk away. Nice that Punk was respectful of Jerry Lynn, given his stature and their history. And Hook was kind of hanging out over with Jack Perry afterwards. And that was it. And it was framed by the Young Bucks. We didn't know – we knew this was going to air, but we didn't know the context in which it would be presented. The Bucks – said they were airing this. They called Jack Perry a scapegoat. First time that's been on the air. And they said that the other guy wanted to make the show about himself. Ultimately, this created a distraction, which led to them losing to FTR. So they tried to build this into kind of hyping their FTR match at Dynasty by saying they're out for revenge because FTR are friends with this other person. And I guess the implication was, don't have to guess, is that maybe they orchestrated it in order to create a distraction and take away from the show. So we got overwhelmingly negative a vote on our Twitter poll. More than 4 out of 5 people saying they shouldn't have aired this. Joel, what do you think?
I mean, I was just trying to think what are the right words or the right tone to use when talking about this. But I'm just going to refer back to Tony Schiavone's reaction immediately yeah. after this aired, where he's just yeah. kind of has his hands in his face. I mean, he's just looking away off camera. Like, why are we even doing this? You know, I'm sure he's even having flashes back to WCW, yep. during this whole segment. Where I just don't see, everybody before this aired, we weren't sure exactly how this was going to be presented. And I just kind of leave it feeling the same way, as that this was pointless. This was dumb to air this. I don't know why, 8 months after the fact that, Tony felt the need to get his side of the story out on this, because, I've seen various clips on this now where CM Punk, when he was on Ariel Helwani, talking about the situation, I mean, it's essentially exactly how he described it. He pie-faced Jack Perry and then pushed him and then puts him in a guillotine. It's broke up. He does lunge over towards, we presume, Tony Khan. We can't see him. He's off camera. There are some large monitors there. And, clearly he's saying something and he's kind of, pulled away. And I mean, that was – I just don't see what advantage there was to doing this other than putting the Young Bucks, who are supposed to be heels, out there, talking about how this guy took away from their biggest show that they've ever put on, the biggest wrestling show. And then they try to turn it into this storyline of FTR being connected to this. And then FTR goes out there and does a total babyface promo of saying yeah. how they want to move on from this whole thing. And then later in the show, when you have the Young Bucks come out, they get CM Punk chants back at them. I mean, what a disaster this was, and the decision to do this. I mean, you have to wonder, obviously this is Tony Khan's call to put this on there, but I mean, were other people telling him that this was a bad idea? there you may have backlash from doing this. I mean, this was just – everyone thought it would be a bad idea, and it sure was. And it just overshadowed everything else on the show. I thought there was a lot of other bad booking on the show. But certainly, this is just the dark cloud that continues to hang over AEW.
Yeah, it's small ball. I mean, this is – and we'll get into Will Ospreay, too, as we go in his comment to about Paul Levesque and the grind. This is a show with segments that are a product of people in positions of power spending too much time on social media and not enough time putting on a good wrestling show for a larger audience that's out there that wants to, as Dax and Cash said, be swept away in stories that they tell, the drama of what happens in the ring and on the microphone. This seemed small ball is kind of the go-to phrase I had before this, and I don't think any differently. I think, you know, the Bucks can be in character, but I think watching them even in character do this tonight is – it helps people who are on Punk's side to stand Punk's side, and it helps people understand who like me – I've consistently seen both sides of this. I mean, I don't think every situation needs a hero and an ultimate villain. I think there's blame to go around in all this, and we saw Punk initiate a physical confrontation that should have waited. The argument isn't that Punk isn't right about almost – I don't overstate. It's not that Punk isn't right about most things that he takes strong stands on. The issue that I and people in AEW and other people whose opinions I respect have with him is he doesn't handle it well when things are done that go against the way that he thinks things should be done. And so he can be right, but as I said, like the view that I hear most often is nobody makes you resent him more for being right than CM Punk does because of the way he handles being right. And he also has a temper that went outside the bounds of what was best for the show. So in character, the Bucks made some points. You know, this is a distraction from our show. But it also just made AEW 8 months later, as FTR said. I mean, they just seem kind of speaking for, I think, a lot of people, which is this was 8 months ago. Why is this happened? Why are we still talking about this? And if the idea was we're going to show what a hothead Punk is, okay, I mean – mission accomplished.
Sure.
I don't think we didn't know. You know, I mean, we saw at All In. You know, it was a little unnerving even in the Ariel Helwani interview when he started talking about Hangman and the Bucks. You could see the blood pressure going up and the eyes bulging. You're like, okay, this is what happens when Punk starts to lose control, or maybe not lose control, decide to escalate. I don't want to take the autonomy in the decision-making process out of his hands by saying he loses control. He chooses to escalate. It's in his hands. So we got to witness that, and I don't know if it's eye-opening is a word, but now we have a visual, another visual to go along with it. But, yeah, I mean, as you said, and as FTR frankly said, and as Shivani's look said, this just didn't need to be brought back up again. And I think we see in Matthew and Nicholas in character a side of Matt and Nick that drove CM Punk nuts, and that you kind of see the other side. And this notion of, oh, we just need to sit them down and have a talk, you know, maybe with the right mediator, with a lot of professional experience, something could have come of it. But this isn't a situation where you can put, you know, those two or three guys against Punk on the other side of the table and expect, like, an everyday, you know, an LA person to work this out. I just think it would escalate because I think you have some stubborn people, you know, involved in this. So – it's unfortunate.
And I think that,
Yeah,
I think that just goes back to Punk's, you know, main point that he's made on this is the lack of leadership in AEW and being very critical of Tony Khan's leadership, because who should be the mediator in this? The boss. You know, the boss who's in charge of this should be able to sit everybody down, but clearly he's just not equipped or experienced or, he's just not, he hasn't been able to do that. And we're continuing to see his mindset on this stuff by continuing to talk about this and continuing to put this stuff out there. But overall, I just, I don't think that this really changes anybody's mind one way or another about this. Like you said, it gives a visual of this that now we're able to see it. But, I mean, the people who are on Punk's side are going to stay on Punk's side. And the people who are, you know, the smaller amount of people, I think, who are defending AEW in this are going to continue to stay on AEW side. I don't think it's really going to move people in one way or another. But what's just – you know, ironic about this, having the Young Bucks do it and speak about what they said, is that, you know, they're the people who are known for the internet irony and you know, speaking about different things. But you had several CM Punk did respond to this on his Instagram feed, just with a photo. Then you also had Drew McIntyre also had a tweet about this before it aired. And they're just doing like the comedy internet stuff better than the guys who made it cool, I guess.
And what they say, related.
Drew McIntyre, he did a tweet about this. I can't remember how early before the match this was, or if it was right before Dynamite. But he says, time for tape study. Where can I hurt him? Weak spots. What's his hand speed like? I want to humiliate. I want to humiliate. ... Damian Priest. So in reference to that, about studying some tape.
Yeah.
And then you also had CM Punk posting on his Instagram story just a photo of George Bush at the podium giving a thumbs up and a smile, and then behind him there's a banner that says mission accomplished.
All right. Let's pause there. Let's introduce the show. I want to continue this conversation. There's so much to talk about as far as this goes. You know, and then I'll add this, and then we'll go to the intro. If they pop a huge rating, a bigger rating than Okada and Ospreay and Mercedes have been able to do, and then the level stays high next week, and they do a bigger buy rate, they're going to be able to justify this. If CM Punk and Drew McIntyre, alluding to this, raises the profile of Dynamite after the two lowest viewed episodes since AEW went head-to-head with NXT on Wednesday nights, then we can reevaluate and go, hey, we thought it was small ball and tawdry and amateur hour and reinforcing the idea that they're obsessed with this little internet social media bubble and not really looking at the big picture. Okay, then it maybe will have paid off a little bit. I don't think that's going to happen. Having Punk and Drew react to it might help a little bit, you know, get Dynamite back on people's radar as a thing that's generating conversation for people who are on social media. But those people tend to be, you know, the audience that's already aware of all the stuff going on. So it probably won't raise the awareness in a way that would make a difference. So we'll see. But, I mean, it's a pretty overwhelmingly negative response right now in our poll. And I don't know how representative that is of how people, you know, ultimately feel about AEW. Their poll on whether Ospreay should have brought up grinding on the boss's daughter in reference to Paul Levesque should have made Dynamite. It's more than a 2-to-1 margin against that also. So, but you know, they decided to do it, and it's coming off of two low viewed episodes. So maybe it was they had an attitude of what have we got to lose. Anyway, this is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show on Wednesday, April 10th, 2024. I'm Wade Keller, host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter. The website, pwtorch.com, with daily news, live TV and pay-per-view coverage, special editorials and other features, flashbacks, and more. Check it out every day, pwtorch.com. And also host various podcasts, including the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. That's our Blue Logo show. Yesterday, Jason Powell joined me, and we talked about this video. I had only heard about it from not having seen it, but communicated to someone who had, and it kind of fit exactly the description, a scuffle and a brief, you know, lockup and a separation. But we had our thoughts on that too. So if you haven't heard that yet, I think that was our lead subject yesterday on the flagship, but we talked a lot about WrestleMania weekend and the WWE draft. Search Wade Keller in your podcast app and subscribe to this, the Red Logo Show, the Wade Keller Post Shows, and also the Blue Logo Show, our regular podcast, which includes some classic interviews also. Stone Cold Steve Austin coming up this week in our interview classic. So check that out. All right, We are here to talk Dynamite, though, and the other voice you hear is Joel Donnell. He is part of the PW Torch Daily Cast lineup with the weekly show called the All Elite Conversation Club. Joel, welcome back to the co-host chair. Quite a week to be on the show.
Yeah, what a week to be back on the show, Wade. But I'm happy to be here. And you mentioned those throwback Stone Cold Steve Austin shows. I can't remember what year it is, but on one of those shows, you'll find my voice from, man, like 10 years ago or so.
Wow. So now you and Greg are not recording this week just due to scheduling issues. So at least we're getting you out this week to get your take on that. But people can listen and catch up on the shows you've been doing by searching PW Torch on their podcast app. It's available everywhere, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all kinds of Android apps. Just search PW Torch, subscribe to the PW Torch Daily Cast. And you can hear their shows, including last week's. Our show is live right here. If you're live streaming the show, that means you can participate. We've got a lot of people calling, and you can join them. The number is 347-215-8558, 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That'll flag you on the switchboard so that we know that you want to be brought onto the show. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com, wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. I want to thank Greg Parks, PW Torch columnist and host of Wrestling Night in America, for covering for me on pwtorch.com tonight with live Dynamite coverage. He did live coverage of SmackDown for 10 years on pwtorch.com, and he pinched hit for me tonight as I was late getting to the TV with a family event that I had to be part of or wanted to be part of. But I did see the vast majority of Dynamite. I sped through the show and saw all the key segments and key finishes and stuff. So I'll be able to comment on most everything. But check out Greg's report, and you get another perspective from him. He was not a big fan of the Punk Jack Perry segment being included either. All right, I think I got all that business out of the way. So I just want to get to calls because we got a lot of people lined up here on the phone lines. And we will start with Chris from Mount Pearl. Chris, welcome to the show. Good to hear from you again. What's on your mind about Dynamite?
Gentlemen, good evening. Was that the worst Dynamite in the history of the show? I would posit that yes, it quite clearly was. What was good on this show?
Joel, I'm pausing not because I'm trying to think and I can't think of anything. I'm pausing because I feel like I shouldn't say if it's the worst Dynamite ever when I sped through it in an hour 15 minutes instead of giving it the usual 2 hours, which is what I did. So I am not pushing back on that framing, but I don't really want to second it. So Joel, let me throw to you on that.
Yeah. So I put out a tweet earlier before the show even ended, and I was like, man, this could be one of the worst booked Dynamite shows. And there were some other changes that they did throughout the show. Even just from a production standpoint of the camera zooms that they started doing, zooming in on people's faces. I mean, it's just there's that stuff that was bad. I mean, just the start of the show of Swerve taking out Samoa Joe, and then it's just like they quickly move on from that to a video package. And just some of the other booking things. You have the Mariah May match, with Mina Shirakawa, who I don't think a lot of people knew who she was. And then she kisses Mariah May, which me watching this, I don't even know, is that a reference to something from Stardom? Or is that something, something else? The champagne toast, why does Thunder Rosa just gullible to come out here to be a part of this? And Toni Storm just throws in her face. The Bang Bang Scissors Gang. I mean, I can go through the whole show, but yeah, the Bang Bang Scissors Gang, they talk about all their accomplishments, and Jay White is bragging about beating down Billy Gunn, and he's going to do it again, even though he just got destroyed by him. I can't remember if that was last week or not. You had obviously the video package of the Jack Perry CM Punk thing, and then Okada just comes out like a babyface here, and obviously they try to turn him heel by using the chair to the head of Pac, and then there's CM Punk chants at the Young Bucks. It's pretty hard as I go through all my notes here to find a lot of positives throughout the show. I don't know if it's the worst ever, but Tony Khan grades a lot of his shows by looking at the cage match ratings, and I'm sure this will be amongst one of the lowest rated on that website.
Larry, what did you most not like about the show? And what was, if you had to pull something out that made the show better than it could have, than it would have been if not for it, what would that be?
Oh, Wade, I'm going to pretend that you're calling me Larry Zonka, who I miss dearly, who I used to write for a 411, instead of actually calling me Chris, which I'll forgive you.
Yes.
It's all good. I've been called
far worse.
No,
I apologize.
It's all good.
I was trying to communicate with our on-site correspondent, Chris, at the same time that I was talking to you, and so I slipped.
I mean, this is probably the first, last, and only time I will ever say this. I think the best match on this show was Mariah May and Anna Jay, which that's one for the books right there. The scary thing is Joel just went down through the show and picked out a bunch of stuff that he didn't like, and there's a bunch more stuff I could add. Like Will Ospreay taking a shot at possibly the most universally loved guy in WWE. Everybody is all over Triple H right now and talking about how wonderful everything he's done is. And that's the guy you choose to take a shot at. You've got one of the first wide-angle shots they show was inexplicably a shot of the roof of the arena, which, yeah, great scenery there, guys. You've got just an inexplicable continuous playing of Mina Shirakawa's music. I mean, you two are incredibly knowledgeable gentlemen about professional wrestling. I like to think I know a little bit. I've watched a fair amount of New Japan. I might cover it for the Torch. Who knows? I didn't know who that was. It doesn't sound like either of you particularly knew what was going on either. And Charleston certainly didn't. There were 3,000-plus people in that building, according to WrestleTix, and I think maybe three of them got off their hands. There was nothing on this show that I can point to and say, yeah, that was good. Jay White cut a decent promo. The match with Mariah May was good until the end, and goodness only knows what that was after the fact. You had a nonsensical challenger match between Samoa Joe and Dustin Rhodes, which made zero storyline sense and went absolutely nowhere. Tony decided for some reason that he's going to take the criticism, the very fair criticism that was leveled at him by CM Punk. And like you said, Wade, you almost resent agreeing with Punk's points. And he decided, instead of doubling down and making sure that the wrestling is good and amping up storylines, he decided to make the wrestling bad too. So what is he? I want to love this company. I'm glad it exists, but if this goes below 500,000 viewers, I would not be surprised.
You mean like eventually or this week's show?
This week.
And you mean a minute of the show, or you mean the average overall?
No, the average overall will be over 500,000. I mean, I think up until the CM Punk video aired, it's going to be pretty high.
Yeah.
But I think there will be significant stretches of this show that drop below half a mil.
Yeah. I mean, you know, NXT's in the mid-sixes, AEW in the mid-sevens. They've got a smaller lead than they've had in a while in recent weeks. It's not good. That was my thought when I – like, Will Ospreay is just – like, has been so good in his – since he became the full-time, almost centerpiece act in this company. Although, I mean, it's still ensemble. I mean, Swerve Strickland's getting a lot of time and on and on. But – and, you know, Mercedes, whatever. But, I mean, he's been the guy generating the buzz. And, yes, for him to come out on this show and respond not on Twitter or Instagram, but – on national television, where TV time is expensive, and make the comment about Paul Levesque. And I've been covering Paul Levesque's entire career, and I've characterized his actions as being a prick a lot, like over the years, and poked fun at his ego. And
he's called you out publicly.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I have, given bad reviews to some of his matches, which were overly self-indulgent and all that. But if there isn't anyone who, like, you could pick a worse target to say the only reason he got his job is because of something having to do with anything other than his qualifications. Now, that argument, you know, was made back in the day, and for all the things that I've – and by the way, I haven't been mostly negative about Triple H over the years. Maybe by a small margin. I don't know. I'm not keeping track of that. It's not like I've been just – on him, like negatively. I'm just saying I haven't exclusively delivered praise to him over the decades. But back when people started accusing him of getting a push because of Stephanie, it's like he was getting pretty much the same push before and after Stephanie, or the trajectory of his career. I'll say this. If you didn't know he was dating and then married Stephanie McMahon, you would look at the trajectory of his career before he started dating her, and you would have predicted he ended up about where he was. So it's a silly argument to make. Did he have power? Did he use his influence? Sure. But the trajectory of his career was not this guy's a mid-carder, suddenly dated the boss's daughter, and then he became a main eventer. He also is not the boss right now of creative because of Stephanie. I mean, it's almost despite that. Shane McMahon would be in control of this company if it was about family. Paul Levesque is in control of WWE because he is not just competent at his job, he's excellent at his job, and he has been for a while. And he is a student of the game, and he has paid his dues, and he has sat at the boardroom meetings. He's sat at creative meetings. He's taken a lot of crap that a lot of people wouldn't have taken in order to survive and end up celebrating the type of weekend that he celebrated, the first WrestleMania run by someone other than Vince McMahon. So for Will Ospreay to come out on Dynamite at a time when Dynamite's had their two weakest viewership numbers since going ahead when they made a standalone show on a Wednesday night, and to go out there and throw that because Levesque made a comment that, frankly, he shouldn't have made either, that was petty and needless. But, I mean, there's a high road to take, and AEW didn't take the high road on anything this week. And, again, it's small ball, and you're right. They should have come out and just put on a great show, like a great show that wasn't built around all this other nonsense. So anyway, I wanted to comment on that, and now I have. Joel, anything you want to add to that, and then we'll throw back to Chris.
Yeah, I mean, I just thought that this episode of Dynamite wasn't a couple steps backwards. I mean, it was a tumble backwards. You got a pay-per-view that's coming up 2 weeks from now, and you know, did you really get any more excited about this pay-per-view coming up here? I mean, I sure didn't. There was just nothing on here, and I just thought that going off of the comments about Will Ospreay is that this is, you know, there's a lot of really positive stuff about Will Ospreay. He is a great in-ring performer. I think that he does cut a great promo when it's focused, you know, on the task at hand. But this was just some really bad judgment to go after Paul Levesque after they just had such a successful weekend where people are, you know, CM Punk and a lot of his comments, and obviously WWE is touting how this was the greatest WrestleMania, and not just because they had a bunch of great matches, but because of all the money that this made and how much publicity this got and all the media and just everything with it, stories that were told with this. And as you said, Wade, I mean, just the small ball in comparison to this, where really Tony needed to come out here and start showing their difference try and sell this pay-per-view, have some great promos in there, have some great matches, and I didn't really think you got any of that this show.
Chris, back to you.
I think if Ospreay had just said, I don't like the grind, and then talked about how he is grinding and just left it there, it would have been fine. I would love to be able to sit here and only be complaining about how Will Ospreay is still yelling too much in his promos, but we're not even going to get to that because there's too much other stuff to gripe about. I think you can't catch lightning in a bottle like WWE did with WrestleMania this year. That Roman Reigns, Cody Rhodes storyline, I don't think we're going to see the like of that again for several years. It's just that sort of storyline is not something you can reproduce at will. Stuff has to fall into place for that to work. You know, you need a character like Roman who can play that role. You need an underdog who is still incredibly popular like Cody, and they don't grow on trees. So I don't think AEW should be trying to recapture that, and they're not, but they're not really trying to do anything. I could talk about that for hours, but there are other people waiting. I do want to talk about the Jericho and Hook angle. I hope what's happening there is that they've realized that Hook and Shibata is actually a much more interesting pairing, which could actually lead to Hook learning something in real life as well. And they're just transitioning off Jericho quickly because nobody wants to see it. Do you think, though, that that's just wishful thinking and there might actually be some convoluted storyline here for Jericho to leech heat off two people instead of just Hook?
So, yeah, Joel, I'm wondering, too, if this storyline and the – I don't want to say a turn because, you know, Hook – there wasn't a full-fledged turn as much as Hook going, just get out, let's deal with this later. So this could stretch, you know, this will continue a bit. But if they accelerated Jericho being the self-absorbed, arrogant, you know, whatever, in the storyline because of the crowd reaction last week and him getting booed, and he's like, well, I don't want to be on national TV anymore where I'm expecting to be cheered as a cool, as a good veteran guy lending sincere advice to a young guy like Hook, and the crowd's booing me. So do you think they accelerated this a week or two or three or four or five because of that? Or do you think they were going to sort of rush into Jericho being as full of himself as he was tonight?
Yeah, I mean, it sure felt like that. It was accelerated. I mean, that feels like the right characterizing of this, because they had that backstage promo where Jericho, again, just immediately cuts off Hook and he says, here's how the match is going to go. You know, he's saying he's going to tag in Hook, and then Shibata's going to submit him for the win, and Jericho is just kind of leading them all. You know, now he's taking Hook's phrase, a bet. You know, and also you just have the stuff with Shibata. I just have to comment on that. I know a lot of people find that funny, but just using the translator, yeah, it can be cute, but man, it doesn't make any sense.
Is there a new translator that reads people's minds? Because my understanding is
I was asking, is he Stephen Hawking now, where it's tracing his eye movement on there and it's coming out that way? You know, I mean, man, I just don't like that. But yeah, certainly, it seems like they've just really kind of fast forwarded on this to where, to Chris, your point, maybe that there is something more with Shibata and Hook, with Hook, as they said, showing respect and endorsing Shibata after the match, and Jericho's just kind of walking up the ramp, that, you know, there never really was much legs to the Jericho Hook pairing. And I hope that they've just kind of realized that people are, you know, have been lukewarm to negative towards Chris Jericho, that they just needed to move in that direction, not really let this linger on much longer.
Chris, any quick closing words from you before we move on to, like you said, other colors?
Just really quickly, I'm actually looking forward to Joe and Swerve, because I think we might see the title switch, and I'm hoping that Swerve holds it past Wembley. But there's that constant thinking in the back of my head that Ospreay has to win the title at Wembley. Do you think there's any world where Ospreay isn't winning the title at Wembley? And if so, what is he doing? Because I really think that's the plan. I'll take that answer off the air, gentlemen. Thanks a lot for taking my call, as always. And everybody go VIP.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate the endorsement and the good conversation there. Joel, what do you think? What are the odds of that happening at Wembley?
You know, I think you know, and I've been guilty of this too, where it just, that seems to be the most logical thing that you can do here. You know, you need a top baby face, and they just don't. You watch the show, it's like, who else is the top baby face here? And you know, you need to bring more prestige to that champion, to that world championship. It's been a criticism from a lot of people that these single men titles are, they're all just kind of basically the same. That there's no real differentiation to them. And so I think a lot of people are kind of thinking, what's the quick fix to these problems? Is you make Will Ospreay your number one babyface and you put the championship on him and it'll fix all these problems. But you have to tell a really good story with it. And, you know, unless I can be convinced of something really good that's going to accomplish all of those things at Wembley, you know, it's just so hard to say at this point right now, because I feel like AEW is having a lack of direction, especially just watching after this show. You know, and I have said previously that I'm not sure if this is the right time to put the championship on Swerve, but certainly I'm leaning in more of the direction that you just got to do something different. You just got to shake something up. And but also, I just don't like that being a reason to give somebody the world championship. I want to have it to be more prestige. You just look at, I mean, it's always going to be hard to not compare AEW with WWE unless AEW just falls so far down the ladder and there's another company that overtakes its place as the number two. You're always going to be making those comparisons. But just to see how they were able to hold, they had the right guy to hold on to the championship for that long and made it so meaningful to win that title. That was a mission statement from him. And I watched the show, and the mission statements, a lot from people are just, I put on the best matches. I want to put on the best matches. And there's just so much from the announcing that is about that as well. That's about, you know, from Collision at the end of the show, and Tony Schiavone is guilty of this a lot, where it's not, where he said, you know, but neither one of these guys really lost tonight. They put on just such a great match. And, you know, that's one of the CM Punk criticisms that rings so true in this show. So I know I'm kind of giving you a non-answer out with this, Wade, but it's just, you got to find the right way to just put the right people in these top positions, have tiers for the wrestlers, and make the championships and the title changes mean a lot. And don't just do it to shake something up, but I mean, that's just kind of where I'm at right now, is to get away from Samoa Joe, because you see him in this footage. I associate Samoa Joe so much with that All-In show because of CM Punk. I feel like he's in this position a lot because of the way he handled it. Not to say that he's not talented and hasn't done a good job in this role, despite ratings not being where I think that they'd want them to be. But yeah, I think you just got to do something different.
I think they should look at what they just did with Cody, what WWE just did, and figure out how to find a story that they can tell, not a copycat story, but understand what peak pro wrestling is.
It's a template.
Yeah, peak pro wrestling is not getting on social media as Tony Khan probably is tonight and looking at all the buzz and going, wow, yay, people are talking about us. Peak pro wrestling is what WWE accomplished with this Cody storyline, with big stars, big crowds, tons of, you know, just records being set, and being able to talk not about small ball things, but success and momentum and whatever story they decide they want to tell. And I mean, I like Samoa Joe's champ. They want to keep him as a champ for the next year. I'm okay with that. They want Will Ospreay to beat Swerve or Joe at Wembley, and they tell a really good story and they have a big moment, and then it accelerates and launches him to another level. I'm for that. If they decide they want to delay gratification, they have a really good storyline for Will Ospreay that doesn't involve him winning the title at Wembley, and they want Swerve to have a crowning moment in front of that size crowd because they want to have two top baby faces in Swerve and Ospreay have elevating moments. They can make that work too. I don't think there's just one way to do it. I think, well, Ospreay's going to win the title at Wembley, but I don't know that, and it's not the only way to make this work. But I do worry that Tony Khan is looking at social media and there's some metric telling him tonight was a success because how many people are talking about it. And that's not it. By the way, our on-site correspondent noted that Julia Hart got hurt in her match tonight very early in the Rampage taping. She grabbed her shoulder. She got a small package win, and then the docs got her out of there. So her match could be in jeopardy at Dynasty, or it could be something she recovers from. But a week and a half isn't very long to recover from a potential, you know, separated or dislocated shoulder or something, or collarbone injury or whatever. And we don't obviously have details at this point other than the match ended pretty quick. So another issue Tony is dealing with right now. Okay, we have a lot of callers on hold. Chris got us off to a good start. I want to promise everybody who's on hold, we're going to get through the calls a little quicker than normal because we have more people than usual who want to talk about this, including some people we haven't heard from in a while. And I want to respect people's time as the night gets longer here. So that's also just a message to callers, kind of, you know, I want to hear what you have to say, but also understand we probably won't spend as much time with you as we might on next week. So call us next week. We probably won't have as much to talk about, even though it's the final show before the pay-per-view. All right, Stevie in Chicago is up next. Stevie, thanks for calling. What's in your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good.
So I have it on relatively good authority that both the Ospreay segment and the Young Bucks segment were written by Vince Russo. And so that's all I'll say about that. Yeah. I really want to talk about the sort of the casual fan who's probably tuning in maybe the first time in a long time, maybe not at all, after the calm down from WrestleMania. It's such a big event, ultimately, like a lot of people, there's a lot of buzz, a lot of people talking about it. It's all over, like, social media, and you tune in to AEW. What are you going to get? And so my as someone who's watched it since the beginning, my feelings on AEW is great wrestling is great, but it's only great because there's enough of it to go around. There's enough variety. Now it feels like, at least to me, you can put anyone in Swerve's position right now and assume that they can be champion, and that's good enough. Whereas in WWE right now, it's a culmination of a great many things that have transpired, and that's what's getting people excited. When I look at AEW right now, I look at Dynasty and I just go, oh, yeah, anybody could have been there for, you know, to face Joe for the title. And I don't know if that's going to excite a casual fan who's on some high coming all the way back down. I think they're going to look at this and they're going to go, okay, well, that's interesting, but why am I supposed to care? And that's the thing that I'm struggling to come up with. What's going to make a person who, let's say they're a casual fan, but they like wrestling and they see AEW, what's going to grab them right now and say, hey, you need to see this. This is something interesting for you. So my question to you is, did anything on this show even indicate that that's on the, like, the periphery? Like, that's what Tony Khan's even thinking about? Because I don't feel it.
What do you think, Joel?
I mean, this past WrestleMania, and it, like I said, it's going to be referenced a lot because it's just, you know, it's big in the news right now. I heard from more people in my entire time of watching wrestling who don't follow any wrestling. They're peripherally aware of The Rock and John Cena, who are, like, aware of more than just the Cody match. They're aware of a lot of stuff that's happening on this WrestleMania show, and they were like, man, this is really cool. They saw a bunch of the appearances, the Undertaker stuff, some of the CM Punk stuff on there, and people were really interested, and it was capturing their attention for people who don't really follow much wrestling at all. Whereas when you watch this show, I mean, specifically on this Dynamite, no, there's nothing that's going to capture any casual audience member. There's so much inside reference stuff from Will Ospreay to whatever was happening with Stardom. To the CM Punk stuff where they don't even say his name. You just see his back. If all this insider where you need to know and you need to be on the internet and following this stuff, on this real dirt sheet type level of thing where it's not going to capture people. And so what's the draw for AEW? It's, well, we have great matches. And that's the draw for this pay-per-view is you're going to see a great 5-star plus match. Between Will Ospreay and Bryan Danielson, that, you know, they did do reference a little bit about who's better, who, you know, and that it offended Bryan Danielson when he said that Jen Pepperman, so another insider backstage reference, says that Will Ospreay was the best wrestler that she's ever seen before. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, there's a little bit here and there of that stuff, but really, I mean, the AEW's formula is that, you know, we have these shows on a weekly basis. We have three shows, a Rampage, which is our C show. It's very skippable. There's nothing on there unless you're interested in the awful story of Cool Hand Ange and Zach Knight. and then we have the Collision show, which is just, you know, also skippable. You know, it's predictable that, you know, every match that's going to happen. There's not going to be really any forwarding of any storylines, but there might be a good promo here and there. And then you have Dynamite, you know, which forwards the storylines, which then just leads you to the pay-per-views, which is what they hang their hat on the most, that you're just going to see a bunch of great matches. And that's kind of how they've been fueling this company for a long time now, is just, you know, get it all the way towards the pay-per-view, and then you're going to see a bunch of great matches, and then we're going to start all over again.
Man, yeah. Stevie, back to you.
Yeah, I agree with most of it. I just think that when you're, you know, when you have the kind of audience that you already do and you're super serving them, like people like me, I'm going to get what I want out of this show. But, you know, I don't know when the AEW TV rights deal is up, but if these ratings continue to slide like this, I'm very concerned that they're just going to have to settle for not having, you know, at least their current partner now, and having to move to a different brand or a different company entirely, given that they're not generating any momentum. So I just, you know, my opinion is they need to right the ship now, pick a path, whatever that path's going to be, and just like really focus in on it, because it's just, it's kind of all over the place, and it just feels like they're spinning their wheels. And especially with the stuff like, and just this is the last thing and I'll go, but like the stuff with Dustin Rhodes, like he's in the main event and he's going to face the champion. It's very, you know, there are parallels here and I get why they did it. But if you watch AEW, you know kind of what's going to happen in that match. So it's inconsequential to someone like me, but to a casual fan, they might think, oh, okay, this there's something here, but I can't tell you what the story is. I can't, you know, I couldn't come up with why Dustin is in this spot over, you know, Ospreay or someone else. Like, that's my biggest concern. It's just so disjointed. But that's all I had, guys. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks, Stevie. So, Joe, what do you think about the way the Dustin match on tonight's show was presented, but also the build for it happening on Collision and not, I would say, and correct me if I'm wrong, because like I said, I just beat through aspects of the show. I don't think they really set the table or explained to Stevie, for instance, not that it would have helped a lot, but what the context was of Dustin even being in this position.
Yeah, I mean, they didn't do a good job of that at all, other than just that he's the half brother of Cody Rhodes, and they think it's funny that, you know, his brother Cody Rhodes faced a Samoan named Joe, and then we're going to do this similar kind of discount version of that on our show. And, you know, there wasn't much of a story to it. Dustin's promo, you know, Dustin has his good promo style. There is a lot of yelling to it. And he says that he was asked if his strategy changes at all from Samoa Joe being attacked at the top of the show, which, like I said, it was kind of Samoa Joe got attacked and then they just kind of moved on and had a video package of some other things. And it really wasn't referenced until much later in the show, even though they had a graphic of it saying still to come, Samoa Joe versus Dustin Rhodes. And then all of a sudden in commentary, they're like, oh yeah, now he's cleared. It's going to happen. And Samoa Joe says that their blood will be the price to pay tonight. And Dustin Rhodes just says with grit, work ethic, passion and glory, you know, that he wants to defeat Samoa Joe tonight. And so, you know, there's just it's a lot of these, you know, novelty type matchups. And that's kind of what AEW has really been specialized in is over the stories, finding just these novelty things or fun things to put on TV versus building the story. And we talk about picking a direction, and the clear and obvious direction that they should pick is that Will Ospreay beats Bryan Danielson clean at the pay-per-view, and all he talks about is how much he wants to win the title and represent AEW and be the face of AEW, you know? Yeah. And that's a story that people can get behind.
Yeah. I think the Dustin storyline, and I've been an advocate for Dustin being featured better in the last 5 years because of what he can do on the microphone and what he can still do in the ring and his name value. And then you add Cody to it and his journey, and that's a reason to do more, not less with him. But even before, you know, everything that happened with Cody, I mean, tonight's promo with Dustin, it was, you know, there's something that he does that the younger guys should be looking at, and not everybody's going to be able to, you know, emulate aspects of his promo, because there's, you know, the earnest babyface veteran promo isn't something everyone can emulate, but there's things you can learn from the way that he approaches his business and his character, and he's really good. But this felt like, this storyline felt like Dustin getting an opportunity to try to earn an opportunity for a title shot against Joe deserved more than a half a week's notice. And it deserved a better framing tonight. And it wasn't. This wasn't like a complete failure. I mean, we got a Dustin promo mid show and all that. But it's just, you know, that it was an angle at the beginning, and then they still didn't quite get around to really building it up the way they could have. And I would have rather. And I know we have an email on this, but I'd have rather had the show be built around building to the main event and telling a Dustin story, and leave out the CM Punk stuff, leave off the boss's daughter stuff. And tell us just a really good story for an hour and a half of Dustin getting a chance. And I mean, I wouldn't even have a problem with him going, Dustin's ever been more inspired. Everybody knows what happened over the weekend with his brother, and Dustin wants to tell a similar story, you know, and do it over here. And, you know, the odds are against him. You know, it's a Sami Zayn Gunther thing. You know, at this stage of Dustin's career, you know, and it's not like he's, you know, been a long-term TNT champion or anything like that. But if there's ever a time that he's been inspired to upset Joe and shake things up going into, you know, going to Dynasty, this is it. And you have wrestlers talk about it and wrestlers rooting for him and wrestlers doubting whether she'd even be in the ring with Joe at this time and have, you know, sound bites from different wrestlers talking about it and the announcers talking about it. And you can build around that for an hour and a half and then have a payoff that leads to a finish that isn't just, you know, a cheap finish that is more of an angle than a payoff. And that would have, I think, been a bigger statement for AEW than, you know, Matt and Nick doing what they did and Ospreay doing what they did. And all the insider stuff. I mean, to me, that's what Dax and Cash were talking about in their promo. Let's tell stories with characters people are invested in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and they've known that this Cody Rhodes versus Roman Reigns match was happening for so long. And it's like, you could have told this over a number of weeks, and instead you put this on Collision, which, you know, over WrestleMania weekend, how many people are watching that? And then you just come on to Dynamite, and here it is. You know, here's the match with, you know, just very little story told other than a Dustin promo.
Yeah. All right, let's go next to John in Michigan. John, thanks for calling. Thanks for holding. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Hey, good evening, guys. How you doing?
Good.
Hey, I have a rhetorical question, but is my wrestling supposed to make me angry? Because the last 2 weeks of Dynamite...
Sometimes.
Have made me furious.
Hmm.
I mean, let's start with the use of Jay White. This guy is money.
Don't get me started.
I mean, I watched him in New Japan.
Yep.
I've watched him develop in ROH. He's money, and they're just burying him for Billy Gunn. I don't get it. Then you roll in, and I'm watching the whole CM Punk video thing, and your previous caller mentioned it, feel the same way. Is Vince Russo booking? Because I felt this is WCW from, you know, early 2000s, like, you know, 2000, 1999 time frame.
Yeah.
It's nonsensical. They're wasting talent. They're just not making sense. They're trying to do, you know, the shoot work BS that has been proven not to work. And then you put it in stark contrast to WWE, who put on a masterful production, theatrical, drama. They built the storylines up. I mean, this is wrestling storytelling, not necessarily the wrestling in the ring, but the storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
It's superb. And then you watch AEW, and it's a matchmaker stumbling around, stealing from Vince Russo. I mean, what's going on? I mean, I don't get it. It's gone downhill. I expected this bad booking at the beginning of AEW, not 5 years in. And it just seems to be getting more stupid all the time.
Yeah, and I mean, I, if you go back a few weeks, I thought they were on a good path. Joel, do you think they would have taken this approach if Ospreay, Okada, and Monet had led to viewership increases? Or if viewership was just at least more stable? Like, is this a cry for attention, a desperation move, trying to shock people into watching out of just sort of like a manifestation of frustration and disappointment over not growing during this time period? Or is this just Tony's DNA as a fan? You know, I mean, the people in AEW that I've talked to over the years, they're just like, you know, this Twitter is his world, you know, the social media response is his world. You know, the reference, you know, the Bucks too, you know, it's like, oh, respected wrestling journalist, and he didn't know what happened, and that distracted us from a match with FTR. It's like they can't get out of this, you know, I mean, we have a nice-sized listenership and websites and podcasts and social media accounts too, but it's still small ball relative to what WWE is doing and relative to AEW trying to get back to that million mark, much less try to build to, you know, build towards the 2 million. And they're just not doing things that are going to lead them there. So would this have been different if things were a little bit better the last month, viewership-wise?
I certainly think so. Yeah, I think that things would be different where I felt that this, Tony was feeling that he was stooping, he stooped down to this level where he felt this need to put this footage out there, and clearly this was to get ratings. I mean, otherwise, he would have put this on social media, but instead he chose to put this on Dynamite, thinking that this is going to be something that people are going to be really interested in and want to see. And that will play out once we see the ratings and viewerships for this. But I could be totally wrong, but I don't think it's going to lead to a huge increase. I think that segment of the show, sure, because they had a countdown clock for a little bit on it, and then they took it away. It was like 20 minutes out that they had on. And so you didn't get the full countdown to see when it was coming right to it. But, I don't think it's going to be this massive increase. And again, like I could be wrong, but I don't think so. But, you look at some of these other additions that they've had, and, Will Ospreay, obviously this was a misstep of a promo criticizing Paul Levesque here and the innuendo that he had with this. Okada came out here and he started to kind of feel like another guy on the show. He didn't feel like this special, where it's not all that long ago that this guy was wrestling in Japan and wrestling at the Tokyo Dome, just like Jay White, where he was feeling like a really, really big star in another context and in a different company where they have different values and they promote wrestling in a very different way. And now you see Okada is just kind of at this, he's just another guy out there. And then Mercedes. I thought this was, probably the worst showing for Mercedes. And we haven't even talked about that yet, where her stuff just continues to feel very scripted. It doesn't feel like a real person.
No.
It feels like this character who's just honestly reading off of a teleprompter. I know that sounds harsh, but it does. Some of the outfits that she's wearing, people constantly say, well, she looks like a star. She presents her. And I said last week on the Conversation Club with Greg, I said, yeah, she's got the wardrobe game down of, just having unique things. It's, it's closer to like a Seth Rollins type character than this movie star and crossover megastar. I just don't think that these acquisitions that they've had have been presented in the best way. And I don't think that's all on Tony. I think that there's a balance of both there. But certainly you can look at other people who have been brought in the past and you can find some parallels like I just made with Jay White.
So a couple things on Mercedes too, because it's good to bring her up. Jason on Twitter said, wait, I'd like love to hear from our outside correspondent if Mercedes appeared in front of the crowd tonight, because Mercedes tweeted earlier today, I'm here, Charleston. Come see your CEO tonight. And then a link to buy tickets. Our inside correspondent said she did not appear in front of a live crowd. And now Rampage hadn't ended yet. So we'll find out when we talk to him. But she, as of last word, had not appeared, and he hasn't emailed me to let me know that she has. So that is something to keep an eye on too, because that's not good if you're telling people to buy tickets to see me and you end up only on the screen. So that's something we'll update. I totally agree with you on her seeming scripted. It was weird because it was like she addressed some of the things that I've been critical of about her. The main one being on color commentary and even in her promos, it was very self-centered in her promos, which, here's my bio. Let me introduce you. Let me remind you who I am. That's fine the first week. But on commentary, she should have had talking points about the wrestlers. That was like one of my main critiques that I've mentioned several times. Well, what happened this week? She talked about the wrestlers and what she thinks of Julie and Willow. And that was good that she had knowledge of it and talked about the match with Willow and talked about why she resents her in a way that makes more sense. It still doesn't make total sense. I mean, people get hurt in a fight. Why are you holding that against her? That's the goal. You're going to try to hurt your opponent. They try to hurt you. And if you get hurt too badly, that's crossing some line. She didn't do anything dirty. So the whole foundation of the Willow feud is kind of weak. But at least here she's just saying, she's disappointed because she could have had that match would have meant a lot to her to win and be that first champion. So the content was better this week. And it really did fill in. It addressed one of the points that I was making. However, the delivery was just terrible. Alex Marvez felt scripted, and Mercedes felt very scripted. There wasn't it did feel like words memorized but didn't have actual human feelings attached to them. And it, you know, promos haven't been her strong point, but man, I don't know. This just, I don't think anyone's watching this becoming a more of a fan of her, being more invested in her when it does, like you said, it seemed kind of teleprompter-like and her mind was elsewhere, but she was regurgitating words she memorized or was reading.
Yeah, I just want to know at what point did we flip from, AEW used to be the promos was a really strong suit, you know, not having it scripted, not being scripted, not having writers and stuff. And you just see some of the promos that have been coming out lately versus just a lot of the character work and stuff that's happening in WWE. You obviously point to Drew McIntyre as somebody who's been able to get his character over. And it's just like, what happened? You know, where it's kind of gone in these opposite directions.
Okay. John, back to you.
Yeah, you guys actually were got into the subject I was going to get into next, which was Mercedes. I don't get the booking of Mercedes at all. She comes off, because I think she is, and she's being natural in a way. She's a narcissist, and a narcissist never comes off as a person that people rally behind. So if you're going to have that as be your persona, you have to go with it. And moreover, she was totally robotic in her promo, and she's always been robotic, and she's not going to get better. Yeah. She really could use a manager. She should rely more on her aura, kind of like the old, you know, Sting in the Rafters back in the day. Because she has an aura, she has charisma, she's a great wrestler, she's attractive to her male fans, but to me that's not enough. You've got to go to the next level. For the money she's being paid, she should have gone to acting class, because that interview tonight was horrible.
Yeah, I mean, I can't disagree with you. You know, I compared her to the narcissist Lex Luger character in recent weeks, because Luger, when he was a narcissist before the Lex Express, just admired himself in the mirror. That was the gimmick. And when she just kind of wanders away from the interview in the interview setting and just starts dancing, and just like, it's just like she's in this weird la la land of self-absorption. And it's not a babyface act. It's a look at me. I am a star. I am gorgeous. Look at my outfit. And I just don't, I'm waiting to see how that turns into some sort of babyface act, or it just catches on, even if it's not in any way a traditional babyface act, but it just works. I mean, sometimes unconventional things break rules and work. Just not seeing that yet. I'm not seeing it in crowd reactions or other metrics. So, yeah, not good.
Yeah, she's not making a connection.
John, yeah, exactly, yeah. Yeah, and so, I mean, she obviously is going to be a better heel character, but then can she translate the heel character to being heel in the ring? Because the way she wrestles her matches, it's much more babyface, and that's the challenge with her, and the contradiction is there, and that's what that would be fought constantly with her too. It's why she's turned so many times.
Hey guys, you're doing a great job tonight. Thank you very much. I appreciate you allowing me to vent. I hope it gets better. It's got to get better, right? I mean, they got great wrestlers, just outstanding
that's
wrestlers. They just need a direction. Scott D'Amore, I don't know, somebody come in and give some guidance. But other than that, hey, guys, great show. Keep it up. Thanks. Have a good night.
Thanks, John. Really appreciate it. All right, very good. We had a first-time caller who unpushed one. So we'll go to our next caller then and go to Keith in Virginia. Keith, thanks for calling. What's on your mind about Dynamite tonight?
You're having a great show, guys. I want to say that first of all.
I appreciate it.
Yeah. I don't – I'm going to get right to my right to the heart of the issue and not kind of beat around the bush about the you know, some of the side issues. It's just – I'm going to get right to who and what the problem is, and that's Tony Khan. I don't want to psychologically analyze the guy because I don't know him. But the moves that he makes and the things that he does and says it creates a profile for anybody who's even loosely paying attention of a guy who is so, I'm trying to pick my words carefully, just emotional and insecure and just passive aggressive. And then, like, the emotion I felt watching that footage was embarrassment. Just embarrassment for the people involved. Like, if you're going to throw your money around and try to be the savior of wrestling and be all the wrestlers' friends, why would you put respected wrestlers like FTR in the position to do that? Why would you have them come out there and, I'm not going to say humiliate themselves, but the feelings that they must have been feeling, I wouldn't even want to be in their position for $1 million. Actually, I would for $1 million, but.
There you go. Just, I'll keep it in perspective.
Everybody's got a price.
It's just so sad. And Tony Schiavone's face, it's been sad, but I'll repeat it. He was having flashbacks. Like, how many times has this happened to one person in a lifetime that I have to sit through the death of a company? If I were trying to emotionally trigger Tony Khan and I was CM Punk, I couldn't have played it any better. I couldn't have done it any better.
I know.
He set a trap, and he walked right into it. This is a whole show.
As Punk posted, Punk posted, mission accomplished, you know, and I think there's multiple meanings to that, you know, mission accomplished if I got fired, I got to go back to WWE, mission accomplished, I got them to air this on television, and how embarrassing was that, mission accomplished that, you know, they saw that my description of it on Ariel Helwani was almost exactly how I described it. I mean, yeah, just walk right into it.
Yeah.
And the other, you know, one aspect about this that I want to sneak in here quick is Punk got the better of Jack Perry in this. And, I mean, it's like not a lot to say. I mean, Punk shoved him and grabbed him. But, I mean, it wasn't like a full-fledged, like, MMA fight. But it's not like, oh, Punk talks about how he's a big shot who could kill Jack Perry with his MMA training and just being a street fighter, and that's not what Jack Perry is. Whatever, you know, the way that Punk portrayed it. And they just went out and showed, yeah, this is true. I mean, like, when they first said, we're going to show the footage, we all were thinking, oh, I wonder if there's something that Punk said that's going to make him look like he was embellishing or remembering things wrong or framing himself as a tough guy when he wasn't. And the only negative, and it wasn't even part of the issue here, is that Punk initiated the physical contact, as best we could tell from the footage. And we saw Punk lunge towards presumably Tony Khan off camera, and what made Tony fear for his life. And at one point there was a report they weren't going to air that part of it. But you can imagine, you know, Punk at the Q&A with the intense eyes and you know, fuming mad and all that. And then, you know, you're sitting in the chair with Tony and Punk's upset. Okay. I can imagine Tony having some feelings like that, but this didn't counter anything that Punk said. You know, I mean, in fact, the chokehold was actually more of a chokehold than was described to me as, you know, more, it was described to me from someone who thought it as, you know, oh, more of a brief tussle with, you know, arms wrapped around each other. Like, that's actually kind of was a chokehold. That was a guillotine. So Punk was accurate in what he described. And I have said, let's wait and see, you know, different people, different versions, and are going to see things differently. To my eyes, what I saw was what Punk described. And so they basically just took any doubt away, Joel, that maybe Punk was framing things in a way to make himself look better than things really went. And they just showed the world, yeah, maybe Punk's the guy you want to believe in these scenarios now. And it doesn't mean anything else he's ever said is true that there isn't proof of. But I tell you what, AEW sure made people think maybe this is a guy I should trust.
Yeah, I mean, I think all this really does is help. It helps frame in people's minds, you know, who were curious about this. Like I said, a lot of people who are behind CM Punk are going to remain that way. A lot of people who defend AEW will remain that way. But people who were curious about this, you know, people who are more analyzing the situation objectively and not falling for the tribalism of it are going to go, yeah, I guess, you know, when Punk says, tell me when I'm telling lies. I mean, at this point, We didn't hear any audio, so who knows exactly what was said between everybody in the scenario. But, you know, I was at WrestleMania this past weekend, and CM Punk was all over the place. He was all over at all of these events, from the convention center to around Lincoln Financial Field. And I was in very close proximity to him a lot of times. At one point, he had the post-show that he was doing for ESPN. That was just right at the top of my section as I was leaving there. And, I mean, I could argue he was the second biggest babyface of the whole weekend. I mean, people love this guy. And I feel like just this kind of embarrassing thing for AEW is just going to reinforce him, as a star for WWE, that it's, you know, look at this other place. Because that's a lot of what I heard throughout the weekend is people talking about, yeah, I used to watch AEW, but now I don't anymore. You know, now I don't. And it was for a variety of reasons. You know, some people for CM Punk, a lot of people talked about MJF. They don't have him anymore. A lot of people critical of Tony Khan, just parroting the same stuff that CM Punk had said about him. But, you know, it was just an interesting barometer where it's a celebration of a different company that weekend. But, yeah, I mean, Punk was just, he was such a star and people couldn't get enough of him. Whether he would just spin around in his chair on that pre-show and people would just go absolutely crazy. And I think this is just going to continue to add to his aura for WWE.
And Punk said, I didn't punch anyone. You know, he shoved him pretty hard. And then he said, I choked him a little. And he did. And it was broken up. I mean,
yeah.
And you know, Punk is the star of Dynamite tonight, a week and a half before their pay-per-view on – when they've just signed Will Ospreay, Okada, and Mercedes and put a bunch of money out there, they had a story to tell with Dustin if they wanted to tell that story, and they could have told it much in a much more elaborate way. That was the focus of tonight's show and really, frankly, the focus of the last few weeks, and they could have done that in place of Billy Gunn beating up Jay White. I mean, yeah. All right, Keith, back to you.
Yeah, I'm real you know, comment real quick and let you get to other callers. But, you know, I recognize that, you know, way back when the incident with the Bucks and Punk happened, I saw a major flaw, and I knew it's going to get more rapid in these occurrences, and it's going to get worse every time. And that's what's going to continue to happen. It's going to get more frequent because Tony has showed his weakness. And everybody who leaves or goes to WWE or you know, gets released, they're going to talk about him, and they're going to needle him, and he's not going to be able to handle it. And, you know, it's only going to get worse from there. More desperate moves, more stuff like tonight. I don't see it going anywhere good. But you have a good rest of the show, guys. Thank you.
Appreciate it, Keith. Thanks. Our number, by the way, 347-215-8558, when you call push 1. If you haven't gotten on the phone lines yet and you disagree with the sentiment from pretty consistently here from callers and us, please chime in. You know, we welcome diverse points of view. Don't feel like if you are seeing things differently that you shouldn't call in. We want to hear from you. 347-215-8558 or email wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. We'll get to some emails momentarily, but let's go next to Greg in Waterloo, Iowa. Greg, hey. Thanks for calling. Thanks for holding. What's in your mind about Dynamite tonight?
Where to begin? I mean, I'll try to be quick so you defer to other callers. I got a few points that I'll try to be relatively quick about making. First of all, I was going to raise the Tony Schiavone facial expression point, but somebody else beat me to the punch on that. I'll make a comparison of – because I'm, you know, I don't know. I have a lot of opinions about, you know, AEW as far as like versus WWE and being the second company and all this, but never really until tonight, like I was watching this and I'm thinking about the show. I'm concerned after this because it, the first time where I really felt like, you know, this is, and this might be hyperbolic, and I acknowledge that. I might be exaggerating. I might have a different opinion about this when I'm not when things are settled down a little bit. But you got the feeling that this is like WCW, like trying to respond to this super hot WWF product once the once the momentum of the 83 weeks of ratings victories went away and all this. And this reminded me, the specific moment I think about is Eric Bischoff challenging Vince McMahon to a fight on pay-per-view.
And then
proclaiming himself to be the victor when Vince didn't show up and had the big Michael Buffer entrance. And it's just kind of reminded me like that. Or the Schiavone moment of fans don't change the channel because, there'll be Cactus Jack's going to win their world title, that infamous moment. And I don't know, I felt concerned the first time, on a level like that tonight. And I feel like this is also it was pointed out that WWE's responses have been if there have been any, have been the Pat McAfee show promoting WrestleMania week and stuff. And and if this is going to get a response like this, you really don't have to do much. And I just think, heaven forbid, somebody were to go on television and take a shot at Tony Khan, they have to be thinking, man, this is great. If this is all we have to do is have a successful WrestleMania week and have a couple of people say things, this interview, and then a few subtle shots, Triple H saying we're in competition with ourselves. Man, if you rattle people this much, they've got to be thinking well, this makes our job a little easier. And so I've got a couple other thoughts on the show too. They didn't really read the tea leaves introducing Mina Shirakawa from Stardom in front of the crowd that was not going to be familiar with her. So I thought that was cool, but I don't think anybody was familiar with her. It's also funny how there's been rumors of Malakai Black and Buddy Matthews and their status in the company. It is interesting that Brody King was the only member of House of Black to make an appearance tonight. I wonder about that. And on the topic of Mercedes, I wonder how long. May 21st, Double or Nothing, that's a long time out to wait, and I wonder how they're going to keep her momentum going, because I'm sure it's going to be a selling point, hey, you get to watch her wrestle for the first time here. And as a fan of hers, I'm increasingly uncertain of the strategy of having people wait until May. I will say on a positive note that it does appear that they are trying to elevate Willow Nightingale, the company, as far as she made the save after for Adam Copeland and fought off Julia Hart, and they're having a tag match next week. And FTR, when they went out and did this kind of strange response to Young Bucks, it was also a rah-rah promo about AEW, mentioned Willow Nightingale as one of the people in the company. So I feel like there's an effort to elevate her, and maybe that's to try to make this match with Mercedes that's going to be happening in May feel like a bigger deal. So I think that's a positive, but I'm also just – as a fan of Mercedes, and I don't like to say it, I'm increasingly concerned about her viability and market factor going forward. And I really don't have much else on that. I just want to get my thoughts out pretty quickly. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks, Ray. Joel, you want to respond to that?
Yeah, I mean, with Willow Nightingale, I mean, it just really occurred to me on the show that, after watching this, is that of all the female wrestlers who are getting TV time, she's really the only one who feels like a real person. When you watch her, where it feels like this is an authentic, real person that you can make a connection with, and they're not just playing a character for TV, which, a lot of wrestlers on AEW could be the same for. But yeah, I mean, I definitely, watching the show, was the first time I agree, where it was just kind of, there was just an odd, strange feeling. Like I said, I wasn't sure what the right tone was, other than, it was embarrassing. It just felt like the wrong thing to put this on there, not sure what it accomplished. And, maybe just immediately after we've all watched it, we're feeling more strongly about it. Maybe when the dust settles, we feel differently. Or like you said, Wade, maybe there's a rating that comes of it. I'm sure, we'll hear Todd's take on this, a day or two after the fact on this as well, to where maybe we'll feel a little bit differently. But certainly in the moment, and still, just an hour and a half after watching this episode of Dynamite, one of the callers asked, was this the worst episode of Dynamite? And, it's hard to say that right now, but certainly it just felt like there was quite a few lowlights, and there just wasn't a lot of optimism for the direction that they're headed right now, after seeing several weeks where it felt like they were really moving in a positive direction with production and some of the characters and storylines, that it felt like in all of those categories, it felt like this was going backwards.
All right, very good. Our on-site correspondent will be joining us in just a few minutes here, so I'm eager to hear about the reaction in the building to a lot of the stuff, but let's get a couple more calls in first here, and we'll go to Larry in Beardstown, Illinois next, and then Joe in New York, by the way, you're on deck. Larry, good to hear from you. What's on your mind tonight?
Well, first off, I want to know if anyone else thinks that Tony Schiavone had his WCW post-traumatic stress disorder triggered tonight.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
And secondly, after watching that show, what the hell was that?
Yeah.
That's my reaction to it.
Yeah.
The video, I don't think I've ever seen or heard of, and I've been a wrestling fan for over 40 years. I don't think I've ever seen, hey, here's a video of one of our homegrown guys getting manhandled by a star from another company.
Yep.
I mean, I know that the body language tried to tie that in.
Well, and Lara, I'm sorry, I'll insert too. And we're going to show you that what Punk said appears to be entirely true.
Yeah, I'm just like, I'm old enough to remember, you know, the thing with Vince McMahon and Eric Bischoff. I'm old enough to remember when Bill Watts in Mid-South would show guys that had left getting the stuff and beat out of them, the guys that were still there. I don't even think WCW pulled what they did tonight. I got what the Young Bucks were trying to do, tying in CM Punk, you know, with FTR, and we lost this match because these guys. That part I got, but they didn't need to show the video to do that, and it's again, oh, it looks like we're bringing Jack Perry back. Here he is getting the bleep kicked out of him by CM Punk.
Yep. After apparently saying, if you got a problem, do something about it.
That was a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because Punk's version is Perry said to him, and there's no proof of this in the, you know, there's lip reading's not going to work with the grainy footage, but, you know, if you got a problem, do something about it. Like, you know, I mean, I've been critical, and I wrote an editorial at the beginning of September saying AEW did the right thing to fire CM Punk, and it was a totality of a lot of things, and the idea that it just seemed like this situation was unmanageable, and it wasn't going to get better, and, you know, Punk needed to walk away, not escalate situations, and I stand by that is a consistent issue with Punk, you know, that there isn't a situation, even when he's in the right, that we know of that he walks away from and lets things dissipate. And obviously if a guy of Perry's stature in the locker room does what he does on TV, good to have a word with him. But when he says, if you got a problem, do something about it, does it need to get physical? Like, is that really a thing that has to happen? I mean, this showed that's what Punk chose to do, that he didn't just go, you're not worth it, turn around and walk away, because that's not Punk. You know what I mean? His identity or his natural reaction is to hear someone say that and do something about it. And he did, and now we have video evidence of it. But anyway, I Larry, go ahead. I don't want to.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's going to remember some of the few good things that came out of it tonight. The Julia Hart video was really good, and like you had a caller mention, it seems like they're getting behind Willow Nightingale. I'm going to remember whatever in the world they were trying to do with Jack Perry and showing that video, and Will Ospreay. The last I check, if they were going to do this thing where they're going to get back at him through the internet or for what they said on some of their programming, right now WWE's as hot as it's been in years with multiple sellouts, and they just had hundreds of thousands of people attend two nights of WrestleMania and sold out the Raw the next night. That's probably not the time to halfway go after him. I'm just completely bamboozled by what are they thinking?
Joel, it's the worst time to not seem like you're being petty and desperate and playing small ball than to do this after, you know, the most successful weekend in WWE, WWF history.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. Yep. I mean, you're juxtaposing this against, you know, we've all talked about how successful WrestleMania was and so many metrics, you know, and all the things that CM Punk had said about Tony Khan, you know, that and the people in AEW, that it's all about just, you know, as long as they have good matches, you know, but what does that matter when the arenas are half empty? And then, you know, there's they're booking smaller arenas and they're getting, you know, more people in there. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely when you watch these shows and you really analyze, like I said, what are people saying in their promos? What are the announcers saying about this stuff? And a lot of it is just about, having really good matches and having novelty matches and having surprise moments and the lights going out. We saw multiple times where the lights go out and then who did it, who done it, and having these mysteries and different things like that versus just a basic what's always worked in wrestling of telling a story, who's the best, becoming champion, going up against the other great wrestlers. And they've just moved away from that. And, you know, I don't know if it's just Tony is afraid to beat other guys or people are just refusing to take losses, even though he's the boss and he should say, I pay you, I'm your boss, you're going to take this loss. You know, I just don't understand how we've gone down this path of things. You know, and like I said, this is the reaction of this, you know, being right by WrestleMania and just after watching this show. But certainly this was just not a good look for all of the things of the Will Ospreay promo and more.
It's kind of like when you're behind in an NFL game, like 41-3. And then you, like, get an interception and you run it down to the end zone. And then you spike the ball and you do a dance. It's like, you're down 41-9 right now. Like, and this wasn't even anything to celebrate. But, like, there are times when you're that far behind. You know, when the gap between the two companies is expanding, not contracting. And when you make news because of controversy and having good matches, but not business metrics going in the right way or just a consistent stretch of shows that your fan base can be proud of. And you're getting a 8-2 thrashing in our Twitter poll in terms of feedback on the decision making tonight. It's not that, you know, like, just put on some good wrestling. Like, go, like, if you have, it's like if you're down 41-3 and you score a touchdown, score two more before you take your eye away from, yeah, we just got to get to, you know, we just got to do our business. And this just would have been the week to just go and have a really good show and be above it all. And it's character revealing or at least state of mind revealing about where they are right now and what they're hung up on. I go back to small ball.
Yeah. Refocus on just moving forward, doing the right things. Think of that Vikings game, Wade, against the Colts, Kirk Cousins and all that, being down at halftime, and all they focused on was just getting a first down. Just focus on the simple things. Don't try and just go all the way for it, but just try and keep moving in the right direction. And look what they did by the end of that. You know, they came out ahead. Now, this is a very difficult position for them to be in, but the analogy still works of just focus on the basics and keep moving forward with this stuff, you know?
Larry, anything else?
Well, I thought you might like to maybe get a little information on the AEW show the night before the Dynasty pay-per-view. They're running Peoria, Illinois. And what I've gathered, there's a couple of different Twitter sites that do the estimated attendances. WrestleTix is one of them. But according to AEW ticket map updates, right now, with about 10 days to go till the show, they've distributed about 1,500 tickets for the Collision in Peoria, Illinois. I'm familiar with that Civic Center up there, and it holds about 9,000 or 10,000 for wrestling. So that's not good at all.
No, it's not. That's what I mean. You've got three big free agent signings, and last month there's a stretch of a few shows where it's like, all right, you can see there's some formatting things, there's some fresh ideas, and you know there's some pizzazz in some of the presentation, like the Julie Hart video, the vignette tonight. They could have built on that and focused on that and come up with good stories to tell, you know, smaller stories that, you know, are 2-3 week story arcs for TV along with the big story arcs for pay-per-view, and said our goal is by next September X, Y, and Z, and it starts tonight. That's what you're saying, Joel. You know, let's come out in the second half and get some first downs. They need some first downs right now, and instead they did this. And it's revealing of where the Bucks head is at. And yeah, it doesn't feel like it was a productive night. Larry, anything else?
Well, in the interest of fairness, the last two times the WWE was in Peoria, I think they did between 3,000 and 4,000 themselves, but I wanted to let you know that. And thanks for taking my call. It's been a really interesting show with people making a lot of comments that I agree with. And, well, unlike EW, unlike them, I know how to read a scoreboard, and so long from the land of Lincoln.
Thanks, Larry. All right, we're going to get to our outside correspondent after we talk to Joe from New York. Joe, thanks for calling. Thanks for holding. Thanks for your patience. What's on your mind about Dynamite?
No problem, Wade. Actually, I'll be honest with you. I haven't watched AEW since December. I walked away from this company once they announced that tournament in December. Yeah. I was like, nope, they don't get it. They needed to do the opposite, get away from tournaments and start telling stories. And he doubled down, and he still thinks wrestling matches are the greatest thing, and they're not. They're not. This is not amateur wrestling. We're not trying to figure out who the best wrestler is because it's scripted. So we're not trying to figure it out. He needed Bryan Danielson to come in here, be a top guy for 3 years, and he has done nothing AEW. He's proven Vince McMahon right that he is a B-plus player, not as a performer, in-ring performer, but as an all-around talent because he's done nothing for that company in 3 years. Nobody tunes in to watch him from the mainstream except the hardcore fans that he already had because there's nothing there to tell. That first match he had was excellent with what's the guy from the guy's always heard from Japan there. They had that 1 hour brawl. That was fine, but then they went away from it, and now it's just his favorite matches, and that does nothing for the company. The problem with AEW is Tony Khan. He sucks as an owner, and nobody tells him that. He sucks as an owner. He doesn't know what he's doing. That company can't grow. The only reason I called tonight was because I heard them talking about they were going to do this CM Punk stuff, and I was like, wow, that's really stupid because the guy don't even work there. It died down. You had him sign all kinds of NEAs or whatever they call those things, so you can't talk about it, and here you're going to talk about it. So I didn't get that at all. But, I mean, I don't understand what he thinks he could get from that. Even if he gets a rating from that, it's about a guy who's no longer in your company.
You're scratching your head for the same reasons we are, Joe.
And one more thing. What happened with MJF? I mean, remember all that stuff last year about the 2024 free agent? He's not even a blip on the radar. He's not a factor. And has Britt Baker returned yet? She's been off TV.
No, she hasn't.
I haven't heard a thing. And there was never a reason. She's just gone. It's vanished. Why? Yeah. What reason? I mean, I don't get that at all. That's ridiculous. This company, I don't have any expectation for them. I don't think they know what they're doing. They don't deserve a TV contract. And I thought their TV contract was up at the end of December. So what happened? I mean, did they get a new deal or did they just keep the old deal? I don't get it because their ratings are going the other way, and I don't see anything that's going to change that.
Thanks, Joe. Let me throw to Joel on a couple things, Joe, you brought up. Britt Baker's been out. It's kind of weird. You know, they don't talk about her. Maybe they're just saving it for a big moment, or it's passive-aggressive anger over something she tweeted, or who knows. Remember when Adam Cole was going to be a big star and his faction was going to be a big deal? Speaking of MJF, you know, we went from, you know, sort of jokingly MJF who, when AEW signing, you know, Ospreay and Okada. And now, I mean, if you're MJF, you're sitting around going, they need me. I can come in and I can help spark things. The problem with MJF is he can spark things two ways through his, you know, as he puts it, generational talent on the microphone and ability to have pay-per-view main event matches to back that up. But he also gets into this stuff, you know, the social media stuff, the insider stuff, the small ball. And I'd say that derails him. And so I'm curious what his take on all this is, you know, where his head is at watching this all play out. And if he thinks, you know, that he's positioned to come in and help take people like Ospreay and Okada and be an opponent or an ally or whatever and help take things to another level. But if I'm Tony Khan, or if I'm MJF, I think MJF's value has gone up, not down, in the last couple of months.
I mean, absolutely. I mean, it's funny, though. I mean, even just talking about a few weeks ago that, you know, it's like with all these new free agent signings, it's like, man, the MJF's leverage has gone down. You know, they got these other guys that they can build around, and the ratings never moved. You know, they actually went the other way. You know, they didn't go up like a lot of people had thought. I mean, logically, you would think so, but just by bringing in a lot of these bigger name people, and granted, they're not coming from WWE where there's that built-in audience that already knows them. It's going to take some time for people to get to understand, to know who these people are and really build them into stars with this AEW audience. But there is a familiarity with a lot of them from being in New Japan. And then you have Mercedes, who does have the built-in cachet from being in WWE. But certainly MJF was a guy who was able to draw numbers before. And he's a talker that people were intrigued by. MJF was always involved in major stories. He developed into a great wrestler in the ring, and certainly they could use somebody like that. But, you know, instead of just keeping debuting new people and bringing new people, and then everybody gets mad when they're wrestlers that they like aren't getting enough TV time, they're not doing anything with them. I go back to that Tony Khan has to really identify, here are the key people I'm going to build around, and these people are going to win matches. I want this person to be champion, and then I want this person to be champion, and then this person is going to be champion. And just start mapping this out to where people are in tiers. And so you don't give people this false hope, too, of, well, I really like this person, and then they don't do anything with them. And then get away from just such predictableness of, you know, almost every match that they have, especially when you watch Collision, you can predict the outcome of every match and who's going to win. Especially on Rampage and Collision, it's so obvious. Whereas it's never like they're just building two people up and then somebody wins, somebody loses.
Yeah,
you tell that story of losing.
Exactly. You can have – I mean, think of all the matches Cody didn't have a chance to have. And even with CM Punk,
the
maybe they could have done
photo
more.
Of him at WrestleMania 39 looking sad as Roman Reigns is celebrating in the background. I mean, that told a whole story for a year.
Yep. There is enough talent that Tony Khan has that he can start just giving away top guy against top guy. And people aren't going to be like, well, I've seen the match before. I don't want to see it anymore. I mean, they're selling the Bucks and FTR on the fact that they've wrestled before.
Stop with the novelty stuff. That's what you've got to stop doing. It's always the novelty, the first time they touch.
Yep.
You know, it's like the WWE has the Royal Rumble. And then it starts building up these other matches, whether they happen at WrestleMania or down the road. It gives you a tease. It gives you something to look forward to. Gives something for people to talk about other than something that happened 8 months ago, you know? Instead, it's all this just novelty stuff, first time, these people you've never heard of. But, you know, if you've been watching wrestling for this long and you follow this promotion in Japan, it's a big deal to you. Never thought, just like they're talking about on this show, we never thought we'd see Pentagon versus Adam Copeland. You know, and then they just have to mention a throwaway line on this show that they're like, well, you know, Pentagon, he could win this championship because his brother won a championship, even though they're in a tag team together. You know, the Lucha Brothers, you know, he could still win, you know, but we all know who's winning that match.
I know. Yeah. Lip service. All right. Joe, appreciate the call. We're going to get to Jason now, our on-site correspondent in the arena tonight. Jason, welcome. Thank you for staying up late and calling us and letting us in on your experience tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So we have had one caller after another say that footage of the CM Punk Jack Perry incident that the Bucks introduced and reacted to should not have aired. We've got it's up to 83% over 1,100 votes in our Twitter poll saying that footage should not have aired. You, I presume, got to see it in the arena. I'm curious your personal reaction and also what the reaction was amongst the fans in the building when that aired, if there was anything you could garner from that.
Yeah, I'm in the majority there. The footage really didn't help anyone. I mean, it seems like from the Bucks and FTR's point of view, it was, well, FTR is like, this is childish and dumb. And then, you know, trying to get the 83% behind them, so you know, to rally behind the pricks that won't let it go, right? And then, you know, in the arena, I don't know if y'all could hear, but there was a very loud CM Punk chant while this was going on. But did that come across on TV?
When the Bucks came out later, yes. But you're saying during the video playback?
Yes. Yeah, could you hear the arena at all, or was it?
Did that come across you, Joel? I didn't pick up on it.
No, there was no audio, but I did before we started this show. I saw an in arena camera, and I saw that when the video started, it seemed like there were some people, a couple shouts for CM Punk, some people are trying to boo it out, but it sounded to me like the CM Punk chants won out once that kind of brawl portion of the video began.
Correct. Yeah, it was majority CM Punk, pro CM Punk. I don't know if they mentioned it on TV or not, but here in Charleston was where Punk called out Hangman in the ring. So it seemed like that was
I don't think that was mentioned.
Okay. Yeah. So probably the location of this Dynamite 2 on top of being Mania Week was, like a little extra, this was when Punk sat in the ring and called Hangman out, who was, not coming out, obviously. That's when he said the apology needs to be, louder or whatever than the insult. So my guess is that was part of it. They're like, we're in Charleston again, so let's get Punk back for what he did the last time we were in Charleston. It's just nonsense. If this doesn't end with FTR just destroying them, then what's it all for, right?
And yeah, I mean, I still am not sure, like, storyline-wise, what they were going for out of all this, other than drawing a lot of attention to somebody who's not in their company anymore and picking out a scab at a time when they should have turned the page. As FTR said, we're 8 months out. We should be talking about other things. And, Adam Copeland last week, Jason, he was like, hey, we can love all wrestling. And then what I've just heard to this, it's like, well, now we're going to pick a scab and make the conversation about something behind the scenes. And again, I mean, I don't want to soften the and again, it wasn't really, fully in view, but I don't want to soften that Punk lunged in a direction that apparently was, Tony Khan. There was talk of a speaker being knocked over. And, if you look in his eyes, you can imagine Tony being like, and why is Punk reacting that way? You know what I mean? Like, he's the one who walked up to Perry. He could have just, avoided that. So I don't want to, like, that's part of the issue with Punk, is he can be right, but he can also react to it poorly. And
right.
And that video showed that. But here's the thing. That is not what AEW is pointing at. They're not saying, hey, here's this hothead who, when he's right, can't control his temper. That's not the narrative. I don't even know what the narrative is. Well, I think created a storyline, which is Punk was intentionally creating a distraction so that the Bucks would have to be EVPs and not be able to beat FTR. Nobody's talking or thinking that. You know what I mean? You can't show real life.
Right.
Add a storyline to it and expect that to be what people
think. Right.
So, that is the explanation pasted on this when they decided that they wanted to air it. And I'm still wondering what the rationale is for airing it, because the one thing you'd want to do to air it is go, the guy portrayed himself as dominating a fight he didn't dominate, or a scuffle, and we want to show you that he lunged at a guy who's not who wasn't challenging him to fight him, like Perry apparently was. So, but that wasn't what they framed it as. So, Jason, so CM Punk chants, obviously AEW wants fans to boo the Bucks right now, but that's also weird because they're not feuding with Punk. Talk about the reaction to FTR in that arena and what they were saying and what you took from it. Go into that more.
Yeah. So, I mean, FTR heavily over in Charleston, West Virginia. West Virginia is NWA country, horseman country. So, FTR wrestles like independent shows in like small towns in West Virginia from time to time. So, they're big in the area. The fans were definitely behind them, and they got the reaction they wanted. So, where it was a little bit of CM Punk chance, like, while it was all going on, and FTR, I think, was able to kind of squash that, so the chance became FTR chance instead. So they did the best of what they had. I mean, it was a good rah-rah speech.
Yeah. So talk about the Will Ospreay promo and the reaction when he made the reference to, you know, Levesque being in the position he's in because he grinded with the boss's daughter.
Yeah. We were all kind of like, what exactly did he say? So he said, yeah, it was like, so he said to Triple H, that's his position because he slept with the boss's daughter?
He was saying he got... He got his power by, like, it's play on the word grind. You know, Ospreay doesn't want the grind, and so they decided to play on words and say, well, it's the grind of Levesque on Stephanie that got him in a position of power, which I refuted earlier in the show. You know, I mean, Triple H's career with DX was on a trajectory to exactly the career he had with or without Stephanie, and he would not have this position if he weren't competent. By now, either Vince McMahon or Nick Khan or whomever would have ousted him and replaced him. He has obviously earned this spot. And so it just came across to me as bad timing if you're a lead babyface for the challenger company to be going after somebody who is actually pretty immensely popular and seen universally as successful at his job for merit, not nepotism.
Right, yeah. Because, you know, pretty much everyone is in love with everything that Triple H is doing on the WWE side right now. So, you know, all six cylinders are firing. So to take that shot, you know, I think you use the term a lot, small ball. So it is. Like, everyone needs to focus on what they're doing and not what others are doing, and not, you know, but what probably happened in that moment, right? Like a good handful of tweets went out. Tony probably saw them, like, oh yeah, you know, we got them. But again, that's not the audience. To grow and to get bigger, you know, it's got to be more than a few pot shots here and there to the other side.
Yeah. Joel, do you have a question for Jason?
Yeah, Jason. So, I mean, certainly watching at home, this is what we've been talking about a lot through the show, is that it just felt like after they aired that, the all-in footage, I in the building, was there like a shift in tone for the rest of the show after watching that? Because certainly we've heard from callers and from myself, like, it just had this kind of yucky feeling, you know, of after seeing that it just, you know, what was the vibe like after seeing this thing in the building? Did it change at all?
I don't think so. Not too much in the building. I think the crowd was still all right. Cause I mean, the last hour there wasn't much, I guess, drama, right? Like, you know, there was the token women's match, which they went out there and gave a hell of a match, chopping the crap out of each other. But, you know, it was a match that not much happened. And then the Toni Storm and Thunder Rosa segment was weird, where they just immediately started brawling for like 3 seconds and then separated. And then, there was no chance Dustin Rhodes would win the main event. So it was just like, well, I guess we're all just waiting for Swerve to come back and get his revenge at the end. because, like, people just kept looking around. You know, I was sitting in the front row. So, like, everyone just kind of like, well, is he coming from the left? Is he coming from the right? Like, it was more, you know, just like, well, I guess we'll see what happens here at the end. But, you know, overall, I mean, there just wasn't any drama. There wasn't any... Yeah, the biggest stars that have come here in the past, you know, were not here tonight. It was an average show after that. I think it was a combination of the footage just coming along with, like, you know, didn't have any big moments afterwards.
I want to add something, too, about the angle with Swerve. And tell me if you think it's true but not a big deal, because that's probably the case here. But Swerve was kind of a dick. That was kind of a dick move. Dustin Rhodes, this legend in his 50s, gets a shot at Samoa Joe. And Swerve, a guy who's done home invasions, he doesn't exactly have high moral ground, you know, in maybe 3 years from now, after 3 years of being a good citizen, he can. He goes and almost takes Joe out and takes away Dustin's chance to earn a title shot just selfishly, even though he already has a match against him scheduled for a week from Sunday. Joel, a little sort of off topic in terms of the on-site correspondent, but do you think that's true, but it doesn't matter? What do you think?
Can you rephrase the question again?
Go ahead, Jason. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I think it would have been right. You could have tweaked it just a hair, right? Like the show could have opened with Renee calling out Swerve for an interview about what happened last week. Joe could have came out, and then they brawl.
Yeah, exactly.
The heel could have attacked the baby face, and then, you know, he could have had the same exact brawl after that.
Yeah, Joel, my point was that Swerve, you know, attacking Joe was actually potentially cost Dustin his chance at earning a title shot.
Yeah.
Granted, the match took place an hour and a half later, but it you know, the storyline was, it's kind of a dick move from Swerve, I would say. Like, oh, I want to beat up Joe. Well, you got a match with him a week from Sunday. Just wait. Let Dustin have his night. And that's obviously, I'm not picking on Swerve the person. I'm saying the way he was booked made the Swerve Strickland character look like he was kind of wrapped up in himself and not thinking of poor Dustin. I mean, Swerve, if the Dustin Joe match happens and Joe is cheating and then Swerve, like Joe takes out a chain and is going to use it. Well, first take the chain away. That's fine. Then Swerve, you know, if Joe puts Dustin in a sleeper afterwards, then Swerve comes out. But I just did, booking-wise, I would have nixed a babyface attacking heel on his way to the ring, which could cost another babyface a chance to earn a title shot. When we talk about the bad booking on the show, that's one of the things I think was bad.
I mean, it was such an odd way to start the show, too, where I just felt like it kind of, that's what I'm wondering about, is that the shifting of the energy in this show, because we talk a lot about pacing of shows, and this was just such, like, I can see them thinking, like, wow, what a crazy way we're going to start the show. We're going to kick it off with the Samoa Joe match, and then, no, but Swerve's going to attack him from behind, because now that's the cool thing, is to attack people during their entrances, you know, and potentially take that away from Dustin Rhodes. But it was like it didn't even matter, because it's like, obviously, you know, as you're saying, it's like, you know, we already knew the outcome of that match anyway, so there was just no drama in that match. But yeah, certainly it makes Swerve just, you know, it's like they're not even thinking about those types of things. You know, we're stuck in this like 90s period of just attacking people, and it's all just shades of gray. There's no baby faces or heels. It's just, you know, because they want to get blood and they want violence and stuff, they're just going to attack them whenever. Whereas certainly as Swerve is like the one kind of baby face that you're running with right now, you know, until you get Will Ospreay up and going, and you're certainly not doing him favors by booking him that way.
Yeah. Jason, I asked you an email, and at the time she had not appeared on camera. Did Mercedes Moné ever appear in front of the fans tonight?
She did not.
And she tweeted, but she tweeted, come see me tonight, and linked to Ticketmaster, how to buy tickets.
Yeah, because I saw that, and it was on her Instagram story, too, like who's from West Virginia, who's coming tonight, something to that nature, too. So, there were certainly implications. Now, it's possible that there was going to be some sort of angle in Rampage. Spoiler for whoever might be listening right now. I don't want the spoiler. All right, 3, 2, 1. Julia Hart was wrestling Layla Hirsch, and Layla jumped out of the ring on top of her, and it didn't look anything weird at all, but Julia was, like, holding that shoulder that was all taped up, and when she rolled in, the ref checked on her, they were, like, they called the doc over, and then they had Julia just do a quick roll-up, and the match ended, and they got her out of there, and she was, like, kind of in tears, and the securities, you know, the docs were all like, she's hurt, and they ran her to the back, like, really quick. So, you know, the fact that she had a match tonight after the potential jump, I guess, on Dynamite made us think that they're – could have been something, but if she was there, I would think that they would have sent her out like after the cameras are rolling or something.
you want to build return business. And one of the ways you return business is stuff that, frankly, WWE is doing, which is after TV events. You see Cody and Seth come out and sign autographs for 45 minutes, or they talk to the crowd and have a little, you know, casual personal conversation and all that. And it doesn't have to be exactly that, but this has been done by companies for a long time. You want to thank the fans you have, not it through, you know, I mean, her tweet was, "I'm here, Charleston. Come see your CEO tonight, Ticketmaster. Hashtag AW." I mean, come watch me on a TV screen for a pre-taped interview. I mean, you know, I mean, yeah. Of all the things that AW is doing wrong, this isn't like a top five thing, but it is worth noting, and absolutely, they should be called out, and they should be called out for it. And by the way, we called out WWE for tons of false advertising over the years. So if you're one of those people who thinks anytime you hear something bad about the company you love that people are being unfair and one-sided, you're not, you know, you just don't have the big picture. We call out this no matter who does it and have a long track record of doing so. I don't insert that a lot, but, you know, this has been, obviously a show full of people disappointed in AEW. But if WWE is doing it, we'd say the same thing. We are not brand loyal in that sense in the way that we approach this.
Yeah, but, you know, I've been to the Charleston shows every time they've been there, which is now the third time, and then I've been to a couple of the pay-per-views in Vegas, and of the Sting's last match. So you know, I've seen, you know, the many errors of AEW along the way. Tonight was definitely the worst after show, right? Like, the main event of Rampage was Jay White, and then him and the Guns were just kind of gloating and talking some crap about West Virginia, and then the Acclaim come out, beat them up, throw them out of the ring, and then they're the ones who end the night, and with, you know, like not like a. Not the babyface chasing the world champion. In the past, it was Kenny. It was the Bucks. You know, like it was Cody. Like with the first time around. You know, it was their bigger stars who were the ones that were ending the show, and it was the Acclaim. You know, and they ran around and scissored people or whatever. But it was definitely the worst ending that I've seen in a while.
What kind of reaction did Adam Copeland get?
Great. Yeah, it was a big pop. I'm sure there's some historians out there, but I would have to venture that Adam Copeland has never wrestled in Charleston, West Virginia before.
Oh, interesting.
I don't know this to be 100% true, but back in the day, you know, It was weird. WCW always had Charleston, West Virginia, and WWE would go to a neighboring town, and never did they cross paths. So, it would be my guess that it was the first time, and, you know, the pinch, you know, I think you guys probably touched base on it, you know, the pinch match, it was solid, it was good action, right? And the crowd was okay, but of course Copeland was winning.
What was the reaction for the Hook Jericho saga tonight?
Not much. like
did Jericho get booed coming out? Was it an anti-Jericho reaction for the beginning, or did they kind of, you know, buy into the storyline and boo him at that point?
Yeah, he got cheers coming out. Yeah, it was boos that he was distracting Hook, but then Jericho came out for Rampage to Judas, and then, you know, everybody sung along while Jericho was, like, up in the ring, like, you know, singing along with everybody else. So, you know, whatever, if he was trying to get booed, you know, like, less than an hour later, he was like, "Hey, everyone, love me now."
Oh, wow.
Okada. What kind of did it? If you didn't know who he was and you bought a ticket because your pro wrestling was in town, would you have thought this guy is a big star based on the crowd reaction he got?
No. The AEW's got a long way to go to introduce Okada to the average fan. Like, you know, one of the biggest stars, right, like in Japan, is in Charleston, West Virginia. And like the interest was good, and there was definitely like some of the fans who knew who he was, but it didn't seem like anyone popped for the Rainmaker finish. Like, it just seemed like, oh, okay. Like my wife was there, and she was just, she was not that impressed with she was more impressed with the entrance with the Okada Bucks falling from down and mm-hmm. and everything. But long build there. They gotta have him squash some dudes really quick with the Rainmaker. Get that over, go back to, old days where, guys were just coming out and doing quick squashes to get their finishers over. That's the move there.
Yeah. Yep. I'm with you on that. Did Tony Khan speak to the crowd in person once, more than once?
Twice, actually. Before Dynamite. Yeah, same as in years past. Right before Dynamite comes on. So he asked the crowd who had been here. This is their third time here. Who'd been here once, twice, three times, and then asked for everyone to get on their feet, and the greatest wrestlers in the world will be performing tonight. Didn't say any names. Please stick around for Rampage, that sort of thing. And then between Dynamite and Rampage came out, and Swerve was leaving, and he wrapped the chain around Tony while he was talking. So he was talking so he was talking with the chain on. He said, stick around for Rampage. And it was funny because one of the big security guards who's at all the shows, I guess Tony, he says the same thing apparently like pretty often. So he was mouthing to us exactly what Tony was saying, basically like he was a puppet and was word for word. And then after Tony, he's laughing. He was like, can you tell Tony he's done the speech a few times? And but it was literally just stick around. He said so, same thing, like some of the best wrestlers in the world who you haven't seen wrestle before, will be on the show. And it was a Rampage for sure. It was not the best wrestlers in the world.
Joel, anything else you want to ask Jason?
Was that Cool Hand And versus Zack Knight match just stellar?
Pretty good for what they were doing. The Zack Knight, definitely stiff and beat him up pretty good. And then there was a lot of blood, so much that it delayed the Jay White match afterwards because they were scrubbing that ring for several minutes. They were able to change the mat. They changed the mat after Dustin's match. Fresh mat or whatever. So I'm guessing they didn't have another mat. So that was probably, someone in the back should talk to each other about that and be like, hey, if you're going to bleed a lot, you shouldn't be on, you shouldn't be the third match out of four. But it was pretty stellar.
Yeah.
Saraya and Danny Exo they were fantastic at ringside. They were just healing it up and yelling at people. And if they, if they were kids, they were scaring the crap out of kids. Going back and forth they kept trying to get security guards to throw people out. So they were riling people up during the match. So they were doing a good job for what they were doing.
All right.
Jason, anything else you want to add before we let you go?
No, I think, it was a solid couple hours of action. Overall, I think was the word that several of us were saying, but no, there's a lot of work to be done. You know, the last show that was Sting's last match, and that was pretty terrific storytelling overall. So it is possible to be done at AEW. So hopefully we get back to that.
Very good. Jason, great talking with you. Thanks so much for spending time with us and sharing your experience with everybody.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
Cool. Good to hear from Jason again. If you want to be an on-site correspondent, we'd love for you to let us know ahead of time if you're attending a Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, or Collision. WadeKellerPodcast@gmail.com. WadeKellerPodcast@gmail.com. Joel, do you have time and energy for us to zip through a few emails here?
Let's do it.
All right. We'll begin with one called AEW Mess. the show tonight, by the way, if you're looking for positive emails, I haven't opened all of them yet, but the subject line suggests it's not going to be a lot different than callers, but we'll see what people have to say here. This show tonight is coming off like TNA at their worst. Ooh. The video was a flop. Will Ospreay going after Triple H or something he said on a podcast that didn't even mention by name. And next match having floppy-looking Chris Jericho-looking Mickey Rourke. And later we have a main event with a Rhodes versus Samoan named Joe. How cute. The entire show just makes them look like WWE bootleg promotion. They really need to get back to the basics and stop worrying about what WWE's doing. Are we sure they are getting renewed by Warner Discovery? If not, I could see Tony's dad pulling the plug and sending his son to his room. Everyone go VIP. Well, Joel, Tony did say he bought ROH with his own money. It's his company. So maybe that's the backup plan. His promote ROH shows on a streaming service and keep booking. Russo's name's been brought up and a lot of comparisons to WCW when they were desperate, and yeah. It's a bad look. This was a show that's a product of Tony Khan, or this is a show that came from Tony Khan being a product of the message board era. And it's all about the little battles. Like, oh, did I win that war? And you know how like the old message board threads, like you'd go, oh, this is interesting. Oh, here's what that guy said, a response. Oh, and here's his response. And, oh, there's a very long response from him the next morning. And, oh, now that guy's got a point-by-point. You're like, too long, didn't read. Like, you just, you check out, and then it ends up two people just arguing, and no one's reading there. No one else is reading anything of what they say anymore 4 days later. And it's like, Tony's engaging in that, but on national television, a message board squabble. And so, yeah.
Yeah, not too much more to add to that.
Yep.
You know, I mean, it's unfortunate because it does remind you of this stuff, because it's like he remembers the beginning part of the Monday Night Wars, and wants to engage in that mm-hmm. good stuff. You know, where the smaller competitor WCW is starting to win a little bit, and then it's like they get to the point where they start losing, and now they start resulting to these other things, like one of the callers brought up of Eric Bischoff challenging Vince McMahon to a match, and it's like. Yep. You know, we're not at that overt scale yet, but
I'm all for Tony. By the way, I'm sorry, Joe, I stepped on you. Tony Khan's got to put on some boxing gloves and get a camera, be all sweaty, and go, Paul Levesque, I challenge you.
Yes.
Yeah, let's see it.
Yep, and he's got a robe on and stuff. He's doing jumps. Somebody's rubbing his shoulders from behind.
Well, no, it should be John Moxley rubbing his shoulders, but John should then lean in and go, Tony, we need to have a talk. And pull him off camera. and then the next week, everything is good again. We wake up from this fever dream stretch here, and AEW gets back to what Aaron Miller said should be going on, which is just put on good shows.
I think you've hit it, though, Wade, is that it's like, I think one of the things we need more of is just more John Moxley. We have not gotten as much of him lately. I think we need more John Moxley.
As a baby face.
Yes, yeah. Not the changes every few weeks depending on who they're facing.
Yeah, or I'm not a face or a heel. I just do heelish things, but I come out to a wild thing and people cheer me, and sometimes I mostly beat up baby faces and undercut their being cheered because people like me better. Like just go seriously, that's a summation of Black Bull Comic Club. I get the spirit of it, and maybe it fits in a company being booked better, but they need Moxley. And frankly, Claudio and Danielson to step up and be equal big stars opposite of Okada, Ospreay, and Copeland. Like, I mean, that, you know, I don't know who your big six who you'd exchange there, because Claudio probably isn't your big six, but Danielson, Moxley, Okada, Ospreay, Joe, Swerve, Okada, if I didn't say his name. Like, okay, you got like a big eight. You know, like, Hangman's out of the picture now. Omega's still out hurt. I mean, just make the show up, make the show, the men's singles division about those guys, and start having them wrestle each other. You know what I mean? Like, actually wrestle each other on TV,
yeah.
And have the, you know, blow. I mean, obviously that would be saved, you know, Cody Reigns. They didn't do a bunch of rematches on TV, but man, this, just start putting top guys against each other for a while and see what happens instead of this petty small ball stuff. Okay. Jason B says, so the big footage proved that what CM Punk said is what happened. This did nothing to hype up the Bucks versus FTR. I'll still watch AEW, but this was really bad. Also, off topic, I'll be – oh, he's off. He's saying he's going to be at SmackDown. Well, yes, I'll be in touch about that. Thank you. So, yeah, there's some feedback there. Let's go to if my email catch up here. Let's go to Zach in Texas, who is very sides with AEW on a lot of things, as we know. He says, gentlemen, let's just get right to it and talk about the Bucks and the footage. Heard a lot of analysis about Punk's interview, but nobody seemed to have a problem with him running his mouth. AEW decides to air the footage, and everyone is all up in arms. Seems like a bit of a double standard. Nonetheless, the footage was about what I expected based on every description of the scrap. Punk looked like a lunatic responding to something so trivial with violence. I love how they incorporated the footage, though. It was pretty much as I laid out in my column. PWTorch.com, he does the feud tracker for AEW. The Bucks got over Jack Perry strong, to Wade's chagrin, I'm sure, and tried to smear FTR. FTR ignored it, and Dax preached a sermon on AEW and wrestling, which was amazing. I think this was best case scenario. Now the tag match has a little extra sauce. Jack Perry set up to join the Elite, and we can move on. Will Ospreay cut a phenomenal promo, which included a clap back at Hunter. When you're the best wrestler on the planet, you can get away with that. Who did not cut a good promo, though, was Mercedes Moné. She sounded like if Siri had possessed a human being. It was absolutely unnatural and scripted. She's the shining example of why being groomed in an environment where everything is scripted is a detriment to speaking skills. Keeping out of the ring until Double or Nothing is a terrible idea, especially if this is what we're going to get. Joel, anything you want to say to Zach?
No, I appreciate Zach's always bringing the other perspective of those things. But I will say, you know, people were, I mean, there's just so much that has happened since the Ariel Helwani interview with CM Punk. But people were critical, you know, of what he said. I mean, he buried Tony Khan. He buried the company. You know, he went on there and he gave his perspective of things. And that's you know, he's entitled to his opinion, the way that he saw things. But, you know, I mean, this is the your fan base and the public opinion of how AEW responds to this and their response to it, just going on their TV show and making this into a big deal, into a rating stunt that you think you're going to get people to side with you. It was just kind of much to do about nothing and just kind of damaged your image for a lot of people who routinely watch this, just going, why are you still talking about this? You know, Punk's going on it on a tell-all interview. You know, he's doing a shoot video, you know, with Ariel Helwani, where he's going to ask him about a variety of things as they're hyping their way to WrestleMania. And this was a pretty obvious topic to bring up in a podcast type of setting. But then, you know, people are more critical of, you know, the billionaire goes on his show and this is his retort to it. And it was just embarrassing, you know?
All right, Sergio from Connecticut says, so that was the big clip AEW's been teasing. Why in a company where people get jumped in the back all the time, where Jericho is throwing fireballs at workers backstage, why am I supposed to care about a little shove and a front face lock? Then they use the attention they're going to get from airing the clip to have a back rah-rah yay AEW promo with FTR and Ospreay. Also, Ospreay's Triple H criticism is so outdated. TKO could have chose anyone to lead creative. They chose Triple H. He's shown on multiple occasions he's the best person to spearhead WWE. I guess I'm still on a WrestleMania high. AEW is just coming off as very desperate and petty. I used to be a huge AEW fan. Stuff like this continually turns me off from watching the product. If ratings are any indication, I'm not alone in that sentiment. Man, I mean, I guess maybe we've driven away all the AEW apologists and fanboys and girls over the years, Joel, where none of them are left, but I mean, you know, they haven't all unfollowed us on Twitter, and it's a, you know, up to 83% think it was a bad idea to air that. 83.2% shouldn't have aired it. By the way,
I think subjectively as a wrestling fan, just watching that, I mean, it was just a bad idea. You know, whether you're pro AEW or just someone who's viewing the shows, I mean, it just didn't come across well.
Yep. By the way, should Will Ospreay respond to Paul Levesque by saying he's only officiating his in because he's grinding on the boss's daughter? 70.5% say no, he shouldn't have said it. So, I mean, not quite as lopsided as the video, which is interesting. It's, you know, sort of interesting that, you know, there's an extra 13% who think the Bucks thing was a bad idea compared to Ospreay calling out Triple H. We'll have to process that a little. All right, I'm getting interesting texts from people in AEW over the last few minutes, Joel.
From who?
Oh, don't even do that. What if I, like, flipped up and said it? Wrapped up in the moment. All right, I shouldn't do that because I can't, you know, I can't even say.
Oh, come on. What did Matt and Nick say?
I'm going to regret saying anything at all and move on. Oh, boy. People knew what I was hearing right now. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. All right. But somebody sent me something. I'm like getting information I can't even like read right now that I'm very eager to read because I'm doing a live podcast here about stuff on the show tonight. All right. Let's go to another email. Okay. That's JB. That'll be the last one because he hits a few points. Shay from Brooklyn says, if I'm a Jack Perry fan, that was disappointing to see him leave after I felt he was finally getting more comfortable in his heel run. My first thought while watching everything play out tonight is that he's in for a great heel run if they capitalize on the scapegoat character. If he's able to complain about why he's being booed for this or why he was suspended or even play up on the fact that he was assaulted, I think he has strong roots for this scapegoat character. I predict he'll cost FTR the match and officially link up with the EVPs. Maybe the show didn't need to actually show the footage to get the story across, but I do think the Bucks did a good job setting it up. Helps give context to Perry's return. Also, blaming the Punk distraction on their loss at All In worked for me. I felt FTR cut a great promo to get the focus back on the match. FTR and Bucks got more juice to their feud tonight, and as long as they now pivot away from Punk's involvement, I think it'll be fine. Well, Ospreay taking that shot at Triple H was probably more surprising than anything else, but I get it. He quickly got back to building the match, and the crowd got louder as he went on. He really is a great promo. He commands attention out there. His passion feels genuine. I really liked Willow saving Copeland from an attack. I feel like we've never seen a woman run down to save guys, so it was a nice switch up from what we've come to expect. Also blended the two feuds pretty naturally. Really happy with how Willow has been featured. Okada squash was fun. It got across his cockiness. Pac and Okada should be a fun one. Swerve Joe also had some nice build tonight. Dynasty shaping up nicely. Overall, the show had some interesting talking points. I just wish it had a more energetic crowd. Well, we can blame Jason for that, our outside correspondent. So some, you know, more positive framing there. And I do think that Shay's email is going to represent a part of the fan base, and it's the one that Tony Khan is probably going to listen to the most in terms of justifying what he did. And, you know, I guess it's worth saying, you know, we can sit here and say, oh, they shouldn't have done this, and it's petty and small ball. Is this setting up Jack Perry to be an effective heel? Or just showing him getting beat up by a guy in his mid-40s, beat up maybe, yeah, I mean, whatever, pick a different phrase if you want, but saying do something about it, and Punk did, and Perry didn't. This wasn't a pull-apart brawl where Perry pulled, you know, like leaped past whoever was holding him back and wanted to get at Punk. He got punked, and then he stepped back 15 feet and watched Punk lunge and leave. So is that a good way to set up Jack Perry as a badass heel, or is he a scapegoat chicken shit heel, or what? Does this make Perry a bigger star and a more valuable commodity?
Well, certainly we're going to know a lot more come this Friday because he's going to be wrestling back in the United States in Chicago for the New Japan show, the Windy City Riot. And you can assume that, I mean, I would think that everybody there at a New Japan show is following AEW to some degree, if not watching every week, that you're starting to get more into that niche audience that's following that. But, you know, Jack Perry thus far, he's taken on this scapegoat role where he wears the goat mask to the ring, but he's also joined the House of Torture, which has been, you know, has been the thing that people are most critical of when they're watching the New Japan product or have seen it for a long time, because they're notorious for interfering in matches and just kind of giving you these BS finishes of stuff. So I think that his association with that stuff, I mean, that doesn't make him a badass heel at all. I mean, it just makes him, I don't know, just the go away type of heat of the stuff that you want to skip and not watch for New Japan. Now, how does he get integrated back into AEW? Do they change that from his House of Torture stuff? I mean, yeah, I don't really see how this is much of any benefit for him. You know, I can't think of what's the best way to bring Jack Perry back into the fold, because clearly the Young Bucks have been dropping his name a number of times and using the scapegoat nickname. So there's got to be some connection there with the Young Bucks. But, yeah, it certainly doesn't frame him any better after seeing this. But, yeah, I mean, I think the association with them makes a lot of sense, since that's just the way they've been framing it.
I think one of the things, too, and this is just sort of a tangential thing, but it's important as we step back tonight that, you know, as Sean Radican's been texting me about this, too, during the show, is, you know, were the Bucks in favor of this or not? Or was this Tony saying do it?
And that would be my question, you know, to whomever would know, you know, someone like you who's talking to people or whomever, like, did anyone try and stop him from doing this? Was there a large amount of people, you know, whomever's in power backstage, saying, Tony, this is a bad idea? Did anybody say anything? Did they say nothing to him? Now are people coming out and saying things? That's now, you know, unfortunately not the kind of news that you want as a company, but that's now become the more interesting part of all this. I mean, I'm not any more interested in seeing the Young Bucks versus FTR. I have no more excitement about seeing Destiny or Dynasty than I did last week. You know, I mean, it's about the same. I'll still watch the pay-per-view. We cover AEW. I'm sure I'll find a lot of really good stuff on there. But, you know, who was this just all Tony's idea? Did this just come to him? You know, after seeing the success of WrestleMania, because clearly, you know, he had his response with Adam Copeland on that Wednesday's Dynamite, and something, I guess, changed, or he felt the need to want to show this, and then, you know, who influenced that or tried to detract that? I mean, that's going to be the next nugget to look for.
I will say this, as the show's been progressing, I did get an indication, and I haven't been able to confirm or get details that the comments from Will about Hunter, about Levesque, were, I don't know where his mind was at, but it wasn't his idea to say that. Now, it doesn't mean he didn't like the idea or dislike the idea. I just heard that the idea was initiated from someone else. So that's the kind of thing that I want to look into here is this Tony Khan having, we know he has issues with CM Punk now. We know he has issues with Paul Levesque. I mean, like, though, you know, like, very, that's no, there's no secret about that. So now is Tony Khan hurting the Young Bucks? Is he hurting Will Ospreay, not realizing he's hurting them by having them participate in this stuff? And are they doing it against their will? Do they have the leverage to say no or not? Yeah. So that's part of the text I'm getting for people in the company is you know, people reacting to this and kind of indicating, giving indications that this is this, whether it's something Will Ospreay did with enthusiasm or not is a key, but whose idea was it? Obviously it was greenlighted by Tony. This wasn't someone going to business for himself. And Tony's like, what's he doing out there? I know that's not the case. That was, I can confirm definitively that Will saying what he said about Levesque was talked about earlier in the day. So anyway, real-time reporting as we try to figure things out.
Yeah, no, that's good to know. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Let's try to wrap up quick here. Let me see. Okay. Yeah, we'll just go to JB and finish up here. JB from Detroit says, what did you make of the opening segment with Swerve and Joe? I personally liked that. It felt like a different way to start the show. It left people wondering what would happen to the title eliminator match, but I also worry that it may have possibly lost viewers who are hoping to start the show off with that match. Yeah, like, I think they could have actually come around quicker, Joel, to say Joe is banged up, but he is medically cleared and he is willing to fight. And I would have liked to have heard from Joe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that was actually something I was thinking about while watching the show, is that, like I said, I mean, Swerve came out, he attacked him, and Excalibur said that, you know, we're going to need a medical update on Samoa Joe. And then did they just very quickly went to a video package talking about Trent turning on Orange Cassidy. And then they had backstage Renee Paquette just talking about how Orange Cassidy would be having a match on Rampage and he would be addressing the attack from Trent. And I'm just wondering, like, man, I wonder if people just turned this off at this point, you know, from this match that was supposed to happen. I just go to a video package and the backstage thing. And then they came back and did the Adam Copeland. But I'm just curious if that was, the ratings and seeing how these segments do. I don't think I've ever looked more forward to seeing how each of these segments do than for this week.
Yes, and we'll get minute by minute, and we'll be talking about that and writing about it this week too. This is one of those shows where I don't always do quarter hours. I think sometimes we can make a little too much out of them because sometimes it has to do with how many commercial breaks there are, and that affects the average and how much something gets hyped versus it doesn't get hyped, and then it gets credit when it doesn't deserve it or whatever. This is one of those weeks where minute by minute are going to be real telling. But what actually matters a lot more is what the next 3 weeks average viewership is. That counts more than any minute-by-minute surge. AEW's had surges before, and then it's just dissipated into nothing. So, I am very curious, like you are. Okay. On last week's Dynamite Post Show, we discussed where AEW is going with the Ospreay Callis family storyline during the week. I think I may have figured out where they are going. It felt like somewhat backwards booking so far, but I think it may be leading to a blow-off with a blood and guts match with Ospreay and the BCC after Ospreay earns Danielson's respect at Dynasty versus the Callis family. Blood and Guts has typically been in the May, June, July timeframe, so it should be coming up soon. What do you think, Joel?
Yeah, I mean, certainly, I've seen different ideas posted about, like we're just talking about the introduction of Jack Perry. I've seen people propose that idea of him joining the Elite and being a part of the Young Bucks and Okada and then doing something of Blood and Guts there against, whomever. You could do something with FTR and then them tagging with you could do Adam Copeland and throw somebody else in there. I don't know. But certainly, yeah, I could see them wanting to revisit that in the very near future. I think that they're going to need some big matches like that to try and draw some people to watching Dynamite.
Also, number three from JB, was the Willow Edge tag team promo backstage a bit too comedic for the nature of this feud and Trios match culminating at Dynasty? Also, how do you envision this mixed tag match next week being constructed and wrestled? Side note, Mark Briscoe always seems to know his character and what to say. That's because he's not playing a character. He's just a slightly embellished version of it. What do you think, Joel?
I thought it was fine. You know, in when you compare it to everything else on the show and that's going on, I thought this was fine. Like I said, I really like the Willow character right now because she just seems like a genuine person. Like, I feel like if I met Willow, that she'd be very similar to the character that she portrays on TV. And so there is a connection there when you could feel authentic like that. They haven't done a mixed tag like this in a long time. I think it's been many years since they did one. If I'm remembering correctly, I thought it was maybe the Jericho Cruise. Maybe they did something on Dynamite with Kenny Omega and Riho. Something along those lines. So it's been a long time since they've done that. And, I think that it's something different. Obviously now he's trying to experiment with doing some different things, some intriguing things. I thought it was fine. And the Adam Copeland is just having fun there. I can't remember the nickname he called them. Was it like the Rated Chicken Hawks or something? I mean, that's what I had written down, but I couldn't remember exactly what it was. Like I said, out of all the things on this show, I thought that was fine.
All right. I didn't go back and rewind because I was trying to watch all the relevant stuff before going live tonight, getting a late start. But I heard that, and I was like, yeah. I mean, but I think having Willow and Copeland team in a mixed tag, and they're going to obviously probably do the rules where a woman tags and then the other woman has to take
it.
It's fresh, and Willow getting some – Adam Copeland's still a big star. He's coming out to the music he's come out to forever, and he's doing this. He's the same guy, just with a different name. Having Willow team with him is cool. That's giving a little bit of rub to someone. I like that. All right. Is there any way that AEW can make the Bucks FTR Dynasty feel different than their previous epic matches? What would be your suggestion to change things up for the better?
My understanding is that it's just a straight up match. They could definitely, this could be something where you do bring in Jack Perry or something at that point, because he will be in the United States because of the show that's coming up on Friday. I don't know. I mean, you just, it's very similar to other dynamics they had. I mean, the first time they had their match, FTR were the heels and Young Bucks were the baby faces, and then they reversed that at All In. And so you're getting a similar match, you know, this time around. So, you know, callbacks to different spots in there. But, I mean, you kind of had these really good matches with them, and that's kind of just what I'm expecting. It's just another really good match between both teams.
All right. He also says Jericho's coming across as a micromanaging, overbearing, and arrogant coach. I have to imagine that is intentional. The question being, is this a pivot based on crowd reaction, or is the plan all along been for Jericho heel turn the entire time? So I we talked about this earlier. I think it was a plan all the entire time. I just don't know if it got accelerated.
Yeah, and that's what I agree with you that this obviously seems like this was the plan. I mean, you know, from Hook saying that he knows who Chris Jericho is. Chris Jericho was upset by that. But it certainly seemed like this week that they were just more getting to the point on it. It was less subtle about it. And then when they had the match, and then you had Hook and Shibata together afterwards and Jericho walking to the back, you know, maybe Jericho will be like, oh, I'm sorry how things went that way. We didn't get the win and all that stuff. Let's try that again, you know, and maybe Hook falls for it again. But it certainly seemed like this was just more overt than in previous times.
Yes. Let's see. I'll also say that Punk did come across as a bit of a hothead as he attacked Perry with seemingly no physical provocation. Mature adults don't handle confrontation this way, even if you are offended by or don't agree with what they're saying. I've said that too. I mean, I think there's that video does some. It's the summation of my view on Punk. It's video evidence of my point of view, which has been not. I mean, people who are pro Punk are mad at me. People are anti-punk are mad at me because I'm not anti-punk enough and I'm not pro-punk enough for the people who are polarized on this. But, you know, this is a case where, I mean, I was in favor of Jack Perry being suspended and off TV, if not fired. Like, I said that. I think that comment he made was immature and Tony needed to be a boss and it just he doesn't have the time in this business. I do believe seniority and paying dues and drawing money and being in top matches and doing money promos and having pay-per-view matches gives you more latitude to say stuff like Punk, like Perry did aimed at Punk. And I don't blame Punk for being upset about it. The way he handled it and the timing of it was wrong. And that's where the Bucks, you know, even though it was, you know, masked in storyline was right.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, we've talked about this for so long, you know, and this happened 8 months ago that, you know, you should never resort to violence on this stuff. And what Jack Perry did, you know, was unprofessional, you know, and it's been dealt with and here we are still talking about it.
Yeah. By the way, the Bucks, I'm told, were not enthusiastic about this airing tonight. So, so it's just more evidence that this is kind of Tony having wrestlers go out and kind of fight his grudges.
That's interesting. You just, cause Tony, you know, has had a good relationship with a lot of his wrestlers, but you know, it's kind of come out more that there's more people who just either don't respect him as a boss or he doesn't get along with. And you know, there's a lot of people like Will Ospreay and the Young Bucks who you had out there do this stuff, and you want to continue to maintain having great relationships with these people because there are other opportunities waiting for them out there.
So still with JB. I want to start off by saying I wouldn't have been in favor of teasing or airing the footage from All In tonight if I was in charge of making the decisions. So with that being said, since they decided to do it, by the way, I don't think it's a plural. I'll just say, as I continue to get texts tonight, it sounds like it was one person who was in favor of this. And I mean, I can't say definitively nobody else was in favor of it, but I'm hearing more and more as the show's progressing and I'm, you know, kind of doing real-time reporting here.
Yeah.
It sounds overwhelming, if not unanimous, against doing this. And it was Tony's call to do this. I that doesn't mean Tony didn't have two or three people he trusts telling him to do it. I'm not saying definitively nobody did, but I am hearing from people with a good track record with me saying they don't know anyone else who was in favor of it, that this was Tony. And which would point towards both Will and the Bucks doing what they were told to do and not doing so with enthusiasm. I don't know with Will, maybe he got a little kick out of it. I just can't speak for his mindset, but I'm being told the Bucks were, you know, not enthusiastic about this. If not, you know, we're really just against it. But anyway, back to JP. I do think this was on a higher level of what I expected, as they were able to parlay it into a feud with FTR. It also led up to CM Punk chance later in the night when the Bucks interfered for Okada, which I don't think that's a good thing. You know, the Bucks. I mean, it's good the Bucks have heel heat, their heels, but you don't want the babyface chant to be for a guy who's not in your company. Yeah, Punk came across as a hothead. All right, so I covered that. Let's see. I don't want to – he's got a lot of points here. I don't want to hit all of them. Looks like the interviews from the ramp facing the ring crowd is a production technique that is here to stay with the Ospreay interview. Also, did Triple H insinuate that Ospreay wasn't ready for the grind over the weekend? It seems like Will was alluding to that, though. If so, that seems really odd of Triple H. Regardless, I probably wouldn't have mentioned it, as that's way too many WWE references on the show tonight. People shouldn't be thinking about that as a takeaway from the show. I'm sorry, Jay White getting his revenge on Billy Gunn at an ROH pay-per-view doesn't even come close to making up for the damage that was done to him last week when Billy clowned on him on AEW's flagship show. Absolutely true. I mean, that's still – we could still be talking about that, Joel. That's the first – I mean, that could have been our main gripe, is how they didn't give Jay White enough back after what hopefully was a week of intense criticism from all parties.
That was just awful. Yeah.
It was awful. And, you know, Jay White is so – you just see him again. He's so charismatic. There's a star there. And we had a little bit of footage from an ROH pay-per-view and Jay White saying, go find me an opponent for Rampage. I mean, really? That's – anyway.
And he faces Matt Sydal.
Yep. A few weeks ago, Wade, you mentioned Mercedes Moné should have no reason to hold a grudge against Willow because of her ankle injury during the match. Well, this is logically true. There are countless examples of Bro Combat sports athletes holding grudges for similar reasons and using it to promote fights. Conor McGregor breaking his leg against Dustin Poirier comes to mind as a good and relatively recent example. But I can't recall Conor's attitude, but it's like, I'm motivated to beat him because he injured me. Well, that's fine, but it's to me, Mercedes and was coming across, Joel, as that Willow did her wrong, as opposed to I need to what's the right word? I lose words when we're 2.5 hours in.
Avenge a loss.
Seek retribution for it rather, but it felt more personal. Like Willow did something wrong, and Willow's a babyface, and Mercedes a babyface, and it wasn't explained well to the audience. And tonight was a better explaining of it. And it didn't come across like Mercedes like, oh, we got unfinished business. To me, the implication was I have a personal issue with Willow, as opposed to I just want to complete what I was able to because I got hurt last time.
Yeah, it was a little bit more than just don't trust that smile.
Yes, yes, yep. Sort of going full badass to book in the show is a nice progression and the necessary ruthlessness of his character to match Joe and finally beat him for the title. I'm sure that's the reason they did it. I just didn't like it coming at the potential expense of Dustin getting the match that he deserved. What has NHA done in terms of quality wins and rankings to continue to get all these high-profile matches? That is above – I don't know. I'm trying not to fall on a cliche here. There is no explanation.
Who again?
NHA.
Oh, Anna Jay. Yeah, I don't know. She's still with Jack Perry? They still a couple?
Ooh, I am bad at following relationships in wrestling.
Yeah, I thought that they were a couple. But
yeah. Well, is that your answer? That's why she gets title shots?
No, but I just find that interesting.
Yes, totally.
Yeah.
Cool. Joel, anything else you want to bring up?
I don't know. I've watched a lot of wrestling this past week. And I wanted to talk to you about that.
and I was going to say, like, oh, come on. Oh, I said, come on Wednesday, we'll talk about your weekend. It's like, we don't have time to talk about WrestleMania weekend with you. Not now. It's too late. The AEW gave us 2 hours and 40 minutes of content here to talk about on the pub.
Well, I think just to add a little bit to that, I think like I listened to the fixed version of talking about this with Todd's in-person perspective, you know, just a real quick version of it is, you know, like the crowd was not as hot for night one of WrestleMania. And yeah, I mean, wait, it was so cold outside. I mean, yeah. Oh my goodness. They were saying it was 52 degrees on the screen, feels like with the wind chill. Yep. No, I mean, people were just sitting there freezing. It was not for a lack of people enjoying or being invested in what they're doing. But, I mean, so many people were ill-prepared for the weather. And us as Minnesota people, we always know that you pack your mittens with you, you bring the hat, you bring the extra layer, bring the thicker socks. And so, like, I was sitting there just fine. But other people were just wearing a hoodie. I'm like, what are you thinking? Like, it is so cold for this event that you, people just came so ill-prepared for that. And the weather was much nicer the next day. But, I mean, the biggest takeaway of it was that I've been to the last – I was at 38 and 39. And one of the things was is that, yeah, while it is nice to watch from home of the two nights of WrestleMania, the difference this time around was that in the other 2 years – that it was kind of like, hey, we're really excited for WrestleMania. We saw night one. Everybody was really hyped. And then night two is just really much like the hangover of it.
Yeah.
And people are just not as excited. They're kind of tired at this point. You've already seen the stage. You've already seen a lot of the big stars. But this time, it was the way that WrestleMania should be built up, which is you get to see big stars night one, but night two just cranks it up a couple more notches. And that had just... people were so much more excited for night two that it just had a different vibe in the building walking in there, where people were just so much more excited for night two, which just was not the case the previous years. So I was encouraged by the way that they had done that, that they made it where you want to be more excited for night two. Whereas night one, you're already going to get the excitement from being in the stadium. You know, everybody's been waiting a long time for this, but make it where night two is more of that bigger thing.
I'm glad to hear from you about the weather. Cause when, Michael Cole kept complaining, it's 60 with a wind chill, like 50. I'm like, 50 degrees is like, let's go outside in shorts and wash the car and play tennis and go biking. And it's like, when you're in the 50s in Minnesota, it's like go out. So you would know and better. So it was justified to complain. And I know Michael Cole's from San Antonio and his, you know, blood isn't, you know, we all adjust to cold weather. You know, I mean, it's the first 10 degree day here in Minnesota in like November hurts a lot more than 10 degrees does in February. You know, we're just getting more used to it. That's like a warm day in February sometimes. So I get all that. But if it was really that bad and people weren't ill prepared, I mean, it's not quite amputation weather from frostbite or anything, but it is interesting. And I think that's something that they're figuring out. You know, the two night thing is still relatively new, but you know, maybe it's happenstance and, you know, just worked out that way. But if they can, you know, they always want to find that balance. So people who go one night or the other feel like they got to see something good, not something inferior. And then if they go both nights, you don't want them to seem burned out on the second night. And it sounds like they took a step in that direction.
Yeah, I thought that they had a really good balance of it. You know, and overall Philadelphia, you know, is a big city, good city to host it. But just the logistics of that building, I just found to be rather challenging, because now I've been to quite a few different NFL stadiums, whether they are for NFL games or for wrestling events. And I thought that Lincoln Financial was of the more difficult places. Also, concessions were probably the most expensive I've ever seen at any of these stadiums. I mean, it was enormous cost to just get some pretty basic things there. But leaving the stadium, trying to get an Uber or Lyft there. I mean, the traffic was terrible. Whereas it just makes me think if it is to happen at US Bank Stadium, just the ease of getting around that stadium is so much easier to get around US Bank Stadium than any of these other NFL stadiums.
Interesting.
Allegiant Stadium. So if they decide to go there, I mean, holy smokes, that is one of the worst structured stadiums I've ever been in, where you cannot just walk all the way around on the same level. You have to go up and then stay up at that level and then go back down. And so you can imagine the traffic jams of trying to go up and then go back down just to get around the stadium. Whereas at US Bank, you can just walk all the way around there. Just the ease of being at that building. And I understand we don't have the same tailgating parking lots and stuff. And so the parking for a lot of people will be a challenge. There'll be so many
out of towners though, who will just be at hotels and taking the light rail.
That is true. That is true. Taking the light rail, and I mean, like, if you were to stay like somewhere even near like Mall of America too, the light rail, I mean, you can get to St. Paul, you can get to the airport, you can get to downtown Minneapolis. Yeah. So I mean, that's kind of the stuff now I'm looking more at, is like the logistics of getting in the building, the hosting of this stuff, getting around to the downtown area. And I just felt that the Philadelphia was a bit more difficult than Dallas or even LA with the LA traffic. So,
yeah, and the Skyway system doesn't lead to US Bank Stadium, right?
No.
People would have to be outdoors. I mean, it's April. It won't be bad, but it's not like the Super Bowl where, you know, people actually have to breathe cold, fresh air and they're not used to it.
Yeah.
But
indoor
cool.
stadium, you know, and so.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
So the weather and all that will not. Yeah. So that won't be an issue. So.
Yeah. Sweet. Joel, thank you so much. Enjoy your weekend, and we look forward to hearing your thoughts on your next podcast also.
Absolutely. Thanks, Wade. This was a fun one, a long one, but, you know, I really enjoy talking about this stuff. So,
I'm looking forward to what you and Greg have to say when the dust settles, and we'll have more information by then too. You know, my reporting will be fleshed out a little more, and, we'll have ratings and minute by minutes, and we'll see what by the time you do your show next week, we'll have numbers for probably two dynamites. All right. Very good. Thanks to our listeners. Thanks to our site correspondent. Thanks to our callers. Thanks to our emailers. Thank you, Joel. Thanks, everybody, especially our VIP members, pwtorch.com/govip, or get our 7-day free trial on Patreon right now and catch up on all our weekend audio at WrestleMania for free for 7 days, patreon.com/pwtorchvip. That's patreon.com/pwtorchvip.